Doug.
You just go right into the Pledge of Allegiance.
Wonderful, this is great. All of us are here. I'd like to call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting for May 1, 2023. This month is Women's Month. Ladies, okay.
I'm not sure at my house, every month is Women's Month.
Celebrate yourself. Thank you. Right, Tricia?
Do we have a men's month?
No.
The 13th? The 13th month, sir.
You're on every day, I think. So because of that, you're allowed to at least have a month.
What a bummer. Hey, did you recognize that laugh? That was your daggone Skippy, you're right on that one.
All right, thank you all so much for being here. And now we're going to stand and say the pledge in a moment.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You have the agenda before you. We need an adoption.
Madam Chair, just one change.
Yes.
VDOT contacted me about an hour or two ago, and Mr. Thornton, who would be coming to do the update, was not feeling well, so he will not be attending this evening.
Okay.
So we can scratch C.
Scratch C.
And are they going to reschedule, do you know, because there's...
They'll be back in April. Yeah, he said he would come back in April.
I'll make a motion that we adopt the agenda with the changes so made.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan and second by Mr. O'Brien that we set the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. I would like to tell the audience that we had a leak, a water leak across the street, and it affected our restrooms here. You can still use the restroom, but don't be alarmed that you can't flush it. Thank you. Now is the press special time. We have a special time to recognize Mr. Ed Zimmer. So when we all come down here in the front, and Mr. Zimmer, would you come forward?
All right, so I will go ahead and get started. Special thanks to Mr. Zimmer. In appreciation of your 10 years of dedicated service to Fluvanna County as a planning commissioner, from January 2013 to January 2023, serving as vice chair from 2015 to 2020, presented by the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, we'd like to just give you our appreciation and thanks for all you've done on the planning commission over these years. And I know you've been a great benefit, and I know maybe one of your colleagues that's been on the planning commission for a while would like to say some words as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can see he prepped you for that.
He was always my favorite commissioner when I was on the
commission. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to work with you, and we really appreciate your input, and we're going to really miss you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, can I make a comment on Mr. Zimmer?
Yes.
And this is a little bit out of my usual role, but I feel like I'll say this. I have had the pleasure of working with Mr. Zimmer the whole time he's been on the Planning Commission, and don't forget the Board of Zoning Appeals. And I will say that based on my upcoming 49 years of experience, I would consider him to be an absolutely model of a model member of both of those bodies. We are, I personally am very sorry to lose his services.
All right. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred.
Madam Chair, just have a few things to report. So one, the Treasurer's Office, she's got a new employee, Bonnie Scott, started as Deputy Treasurer 2 in the Treasurer's Office. She started February 27th, so I'd like to thank her, and then we're happy to have her on board in the Treasurer's Office. And I'm sure Linda will be glad to get someone in there and get trained before tax season starts in June. Just kind of a reminder again about the Fluvanna County tire drop-off and hazardous waste coming up Saturday, March 25th at Pleasant Grove. Again, safe disposal of tires, gasoline, paints, thinner, solvents. If you have any questions, please call the Fluvanna County Parks and Rec at 434-589-2016. The waste collection, the hazardous waste collection, will be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on that Saturday, and tire collection will be from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And again, you know, arrive early. There is limited collection capacity. And, you know, once the capacity is met, then we may potentially need to close it down. So, like I said, just having that in conjunction with making sure that none of these hazardous materials end up in our side of the road, streams, and rivers. And then Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation on February 10th had their fundraiser at Bandage Ridge. Tom Payne, who's also a former board member and is also a Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation volunteer, received recognition for outstanding service managing ramp installations in both counties. And you can see some pictures from the event. You can see Ms. Booker down in the bottom left-hand picture. And like I said, it was a good event for the Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation. And just some upcoming meetings. So next week, March 8th, we have our budget work session at 5:30 p.m., which will not be in this space. It'll be in the Morris Room at the County Administration Building. Again, that's starting at 5:30 p.m. And we'll be there'll be plenty of time to dig deep into the details in the budget, and we should have some updated taxable values from the Commissioner of Revenue at that point, and then there may be some additional changes. Some representatives from Fluvanna County Public Schools will be attending as well. They actually decided to tweak their normal meeting time for the school board next week. So certainly Dr. Gretz and Brenda Gillum can attend the budget work session. And then the following week after that, March 15th at 5 p.m., we have another budget work session, although it's a shorter period of time, to kind of finalize things and get set up for our fiscal year 24 budget and the actual kind of calendar year tax rate for advertising that's associated with that budget. And then it's at 7 p.m. that same day, we'll have our regular meeting. And again, on the 15th, those meetings will be here in the Performing Arts Center. So I'm happy to answer any questions that the board members have.
Any questions? Okay, if not, then we will have our first public comments. Would you please come to the podium here and give your name and address and direct your comments to the board. Do we have anyone who would like to speak?
And Madam Chair, maybe we'll want to add if there's individuals yes. here for different
commissions.
Yeah.
Yes. We don't have time for those individuals to speak. Anyone would like to speak to the board? If not, then I will close mm-hmm. the first public comment.
Ms.
Yes.
Are you? Do you want to speak about the board?
I just had a question. Is this the time?
No.
To speak?
No. Any time. You don't have the time.
Free Hill.
Yeah.
Oh, Free Hill,
Free
yes.
Hill, yeah. Free she Hill? Wanted to speak about yes. Free Hill, yes.
Okay, all right, then I do.
I'm sorry, I'm going to reopen it for comments for Free Hill.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, online too. I don't know if there is.
Sorry, I wasn't sure. So I wanted to make sure. My name is Loretta Johnson Morgan. I live at 18 Lake Road, Troy, Virginia. I'm here to speak out about the ownership of Freehill to my church, Columbia Baptist Church. I grew up in Columbia as a young girl. My family still lives there. And I got baptized in that church. And for the longest, I thought we owned the church and the cemetery. Because me as a little girl, and I'm going to smack my hand, I used to go in there and I'd run and hide and do everything else in that cemetery as a young person. But you couldn't pay me anything right now to do that. But I am asking that the board give us ownership of that cemetery. We have been taking care of that cemetery for a while. And I think we've been doing it under the assumption that we own the cemetery, but then I found out that the town of Columbia actually owned the cemetery. So I don't know if we were really trespassing, doing what we were doing there, but we held a cleanup session at the church last year where we invited members in the community to come down and help us clean up all the debris. There is so much debris there of fallen trees and shrubberies, and we manually went out there, Columbia Baptist Church members and people of the community, to try to clean it. Now, I personally is there because I think I have ancestors there. I did notice quite a few graves that are there, and I think it should be preserved, the cemetery. And I ask that if the county does not want to give our church the ownership, that I implore you all to at least clean up the cemetery, get it in a presentable order so we can preserve the bodies that are there. So that's basically why I'm here, because I just think it's a waste to have that cemetery just sit there and let everything just grow up on it and no one really taking ownership of it. So that's why I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all. Anyone else want to speak on the cemetery?
Strong, and I am just here to support the Columbia Baptist Church members. I also have some ancestors that are buried down in Columbia, and I am working with them on finding the names of the ancestors that are buried down there, and I have put together a little pamphlet here with some names that I've already found of ancestors that are buried there. And I have this pamphlet here for you to look at if you'd like to. And it shows the people that I've already found. And I also have in the back what we've already done at Oak Hill, which in case some of you aren't familiar with it, it's a list of all the people that we've already found at the Oak Hill Cemetery in West Bottle. And that's around 110 people that we've already found that are buried at Oak Hill. So we're also trying to do the same thing in Columbia. So it's a very rewarding experience for us to find our ancestors. And for Columbia to own this property would be a very beneficial thing. So like I said, I am just here to help, you know, help them. And like I said, I also have some ancestors buried here, so. Yeah.
Okay, thank you,
Michelle.
Thank
you for your consideration.
Thank you. Do we have any other comments?
Good to see you all once again. Now, thank you all for allowing me to come last time to speak before you, and thank you all for allowing me to come speak today. My name is Bruce Bowling. I'm the pastor of Columbia Baptist Church. I'm also here speaking about Free Hill. And I believe the last time I was here, I talked about the rich history that I found here in Louvain County. And this blows my mind with all this great history. And so I also want to continue for the great history to be known just here in Covanta County with the Freehill Cemetery. You know, as Sister Loretta spoke, when she spoke about the cleanup there and how much work went into it, Mike was there, he helped out quite a bit, and some other folks in the community came out to help clean up, and I was just amazed of how many graves that they are there, and then how over the years things have built up and covered and kind of hidden these graves. And just one quick story, and so I hope I'm telling it right, I don't want to tell it wrong, but while we was cleaning, there was this, I'm not even sure what it was, but to me like some green big brush there. And so somebody was cleaning, and one of the members happened to recognize it was their grandparents and an aunt's grave there. And so my concern is that I don't want that to happen again, where we don't know some of the, quite a few of the graves, but the ones that we do don't get covered up, you know, years later. And so what we're proposing, we're willing to do, if you also do so, give us the cemetery, that we will do the upkeep of the cemetery ourselves, that we have volunteers, we have members that are willing to do that. And my, also I would say this too as well, and I believe Sister Loretta said as well, if that's not the case, then myself, I would say I'm in expectation of whomever owns it to kind of upkeep it. Because we can't keep on covering up history, can't keep on covering up ancestries of folks that are buried there, that, you know, they want to come by and pay their respects. And so we want that to be shown, and we're willing to do that. We're willing to take care of the cemetery ourselves and with help of others, so then that history can be preserved, and then the ancestors that are being buried there won't be forgotten. So thank you all for your consideration, and thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to comment on anything? Anyone online?
I don't see anyone unmuting at this point. I don't see anyone there.
Okay, so there's no one online. No. All right, I'm going to close the first comment.
And maybe just for the audience's benefit, there will be a agenda item under tab D, a presentation about the Freehill Cemetery, about the comments that were just made a little later in the meeting.
All right. Thank you. We don't have a public hearing this afternoon. We have an action matters. County participation in Virginia Oakland settlement. This is our second settlement, Mr. Payne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The board will remember the first time we went through this. There have been a long series of lawsuits against the distributors and manufacturers of certain opioids. Those have been increasingly, with increasing frequency, as they've said. And the, this involves the entire United States. So it's a big job, as you can imagine, to get all these settlements done. If you recall, earlier in October of 2021, you all authorized that the county participate in the settlements. And the effect of it is that there's a very highly organized, elaborate structure for distributing the proceeds of these settlements. At the time you approved our participation before, we didn't know exactly how much money the county was going to get. We didn't know how much money would be available because it depended on the number of participants and the outcome of some certain litigants who were not settling and that sort of thing. That is, as I'll mention in a minute, that's become more clear. But it's still not entirely clear because this is a second, if you will, tranche of settlements against additional producers and distributors of opioids.
And three large pharmacies, too, three large retail pharmacies.
I was considering them as distributors, but yes, the wholesale and retail distributors. So it's second verse, same as the first, essentially. The procedure that's going to have to go through is the resolution you passed in November of 2021, we have an additional resolution that the Attorney General has requested. The Attorney General has been supervising this settlement. The Attorney General has prepared form resolutions. We've simply adapted them for the county's use for you to approve to participate in the second tranche of settlements. That's what the resolution is before you. You probably remember enough that I don't feel like going into a great deal more detail unless you want me to. But that will put us on track to participate in the second tranche of settlements, which will involve more money for the county.
And just a couple things to add to it, it's kind of in addition to what Mr. Payne said. So the Commonwealth actually has created also an opioid abatement authority kind of throughout this process.
The General Assembly did that.
Well, yeah, that kind of administers the program and provides guidance to localities. And as Mr. Payne said, the second settlement, we don't really know what that is since it's kind of a new thing, and we're waiting to see who the participants are going to be. But for the first settlement, the chart on the screen here shows basically this is what we've received from the Opioid Abatement Authority. These are the funds that the county will be receiving over the years from the Opioid Abatement Authority, totaling somewhere in the neighborhood of $310,000. Now again, this first tranche was a $260 billion national lawsuit, and you know it's split up throughout different states and everything. The second settlement is a $20 billion lawsuit. So, I mean, so there'll be, we don't know what the exact amount is, but there'll be some dollar amount, maybe somewhat similar. The one thing that we do have to keep in mind, there are very specific eligible uses that we're going to be working through to bring to the board at a future date to really kind of show what the funds can be used for. Certainly the biggest piece of it is to offset education, opioid abatement, opioid addiction, those that have fallen victim to opioids over the years. But again, there's a whole slew of eligible uses that we're going to be going through. I know through drug court, we got the drug court program. We talked briefly about it. I'm sure Sheriff Hess and those that kind of oversee some of this, that from the courts and the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, will be coming up with some recommendations for the board at some point. But again, this, as Mr. Payne said, the second settlement is just to kind of get us in queue for some additional funding to put to use for some type of opioid remediation.
I suspect that the amount of this second settlement will be probably on the order of magnitude as the first. We don't know what the real figures will be. Now, let me add one thing, and that is that we received information today by email from the Attorney General that the funds given to us under the first tranche, some of the money had been withheld because there were certain expenses that hadn't become entirely clear and they couldn't account for them initially. Those have been clarified and we stand to get additional money for settlement as well. But same, not more than we expected, but the cash will be there in hand.
And Ms. Melton sent me a text a little while ago that the county's actually received just a little shy of $50,000 to date so far, and again, you'll see it goes on for quite some time over the years.
There's one other aspect of this that I'm not asking to take action on this other issue, but Mr. Dahl and I were talking about it at the time the first settlement came up. We decided it was appropriate for me to be the touch point with the settlement management facilities. Since I'm not going to be county attorney after the end of April, we would suggest that the board take action, and need to be tonight, but take action to relieve me and appoint Mr. Dahl in my place.
Any questions from board members? May we see the resolution?
Yeah.
Because we have to vote on the resolution.
Yep. So let me make this a little smaller.
I believe in reading the resolution so that everybody can hear it. This is not very long.
Yeah, it's not very long.
Yeah, a resolution of the Fluvanna County, Virginia Board of Supervisors approving of the county's participation in the proposed settlement of opioid related claims against T-Bell, Allergan, Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and their related corporate entities, and directing the county attorney and or the county's outside counsel to execute the documents necessary to effectuate the county's participation in the settlement. Whereas the opioid epidemic that has cost thousands of human lives across the country also impacts the Commonwealth of Virginia and its counties and cities, including the county of Fluvanna, by adversely impacting the delivery of emergency medical law enforcement, criminal justice, mental health, and substance abuse services, and other services by Fluvanna's various departments and agencies. And whereas the Commonwealth of Virginia and its counties and cities, including Fluvanna, have been required and will continue to be required to allocate substantial taxpayer dollars, resources, staff, energy, and time to address the damage the opioid epidemic has caused and continues to cause the citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia. And whereas settlement proposals have been negotiated that will cause T-Bell, Allergan, Walmart, Walgreens, and CVS to pay billions of dollars nationwide to resolve opioid related claims against them. And whereas the county has approved and adopted the Virginia Opioid Abatement Fund and settlement allocated for Memorandum of Understanding, the Virginia MOU, and affirms that these pending settlements with T-Bill, Allergan, Walmart, CVS, and Walgreens shall be considered settlements that are subject to the Virginia MOU and shall be administered and allocated in the same manner as the opioid settlement entered into previously with opioid distributor McKesson, Carter Noble Health, and AmerisourceBergen Bergen, and opioid manufacturer Jason Pharmaceutical, and whereas the county of Fluvanna has reviewed the available information about the proposed settlement and has recommended that the county participate in the settlement in order to recover its share of the funds that the settlement would provide. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Fluvanna County, Virginia Board of Supervisors this first day of March 2023 approves of the county's participation in the proposed settlement of opioid-related claims against T-Bell, Allergan, Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and their related corporate entities, and directs the county attorney and or the county's outside counsel to execute the documents necessary to effectuate the county's participation in the settlements, including the required release of claims against settling entities. And now we need to read the motion, and then we will check all those people who agree. The motion is on the board.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the attached resolution approving the county's participation in the proposed settlement of opioid-related claims against certain entities named in the resolution and directing the county attorney to execute the documents necessary to effectuate the county's participation in the settlements.
Second.
All right, we have a motion for Mrs. Eager and a second for Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you. We have next is action. Appointments. We have board, commission, and committee appointments. So we have, if we have individuals here, we're here to speak to the planning commission. We would like for you to come forward give your name and address and address the board. Do we have, I think we have two people, Carolyn Lay, Carolyn Lay and Loretta.
Boy. We've already seen Loretta's amazing public speaker. I don't know about following her just with that one.
Okay.
I'm Carolyn Lay. I live in the Columbia District. I've lived in Fluvanna for about 15 years, and we've raised our teenage son here. He just graduated high school. So this county's been an absolute blessing to us. So when I heard Mr. Zimmer was stepping down, I went ahead and put in my application. Planning is something I've always been interested in. I was raised in a family where my father was first a Chamber of Commerce president, and then later in my teen years he was director of economic development. Maybe I'm daddy's little girl, but I've always been fascinated with it. In my young working life, I had a real estate license, and I ended up getting hired into the high-tech industry. So I gave up my license, and I just took, my husband and I lived in a very frugal manner, and we went ahead and bought real estate, and at one point we went ahead and built a subdivision in Raleigh, North Carolina. It should have been an easy, it was a small subdivision. It started off 5 or 6 lots. I think it ended up smaller with some concessions and stuff, but it should have gone quickly, but it ended up taking 5 years because we learned that with the hurricane problems that Raleigh had, they wanted to start opening up the city and having more of a grid pattern and such like that. So we learned that it would really affect a historical neighborhood behind us. So we worked extra long with our neighbors and with the Planning Commission and with our City Board of Supervisors there to get solutions and concessions, and we ended up winning the subdivision, which was a win for the neighborhood because it kind of stopped in that one street. At least it didn't break up the neighborhood behind us. News trucks used to park in front of our house and say, "Unusual story, developers agree with the neighbors." So it was a long process, but it was a joyful process. We made almost no money, but we learned a lot. So between that and some of my other career things, I heard people talking about, as we opened our history here in Fluvanna, we have an immensely rich history. So part of my belief in serving in something like the Planning Commission is to honor the rural nature of our county and to honor our history. And I would love to see some way that the places like Columbia, places like Fork Union, that are our main streets, our hubs of our villages, can be once again revitalized and central to life here in our county. I very much enjoy the planning process. I've over the years participated or spoken up about it. I do believe that it's a mixture of art and science. It's the studies and planning and all of that, but there's an art to working with the master plan, working with what your community wants, working with what the developers are trying to get. You're listening to everyone. You're trying to look at code, and then you're trying to find, the best paths forward. And I think I have some skills that would lend to that. So I look forward to hearing from you all, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Guess y'all would get tired of seeing me come up here. But I'm Loretta Johnson Morgan. I am a lifetime resident of Fluvanna County. I was born here. I went to school here. My family is here. My mother's family is here. My dad's family is here. I'm going to say this. As a lifetime resident, I am invested in Fluvanna County. Fluvanna County back in the day used to be a thriving county. When I lived in Columbia as a young girl, you could walk down the road, you see stores and people and shops. Then when we moved to Fork Union, there was the academy, there was a laundromat, there was a grocery store, there was all kinds of businesses that we have in the county. Right now, I don't see that anymore. And I don't see the county as thriving. And I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to help you all understand what is needed in this county. Yes, the county does need some growth. We need some businesses. but we still need to commit to residents here who've been here all their life and keep the rural aspect of the county. I know there are things that needs to be done in the county, and there are things that has been happening with the comprehensive plan and all that, but I really think that being on the planning commission, I can help facilitate what is actually needed here for the people in this community. Again, I'm invested in this county. I want to see us flourish, but I also am invested in the people who live in this county, meaning myself and my parents, and my grandparents, and my family and my friends. I want this county to grow, but there has to be a right way for us to grow. There's a whole lot of infrastructure that needs to be brought back into this county with water and roads and electricity and solar power and all that stuff. But we need to find a way to bring that together and make Fluvanna County vital again. So that's why I want to serve on the Planning Commission. My husband moved here from Blacksburg. My daughter lived in Ashburn. I've seen different parts of the world, how Christianburg looked, Blacksburg looked, how Ashburn looks, how Louisa looks, how Fluvanna County looks. We're a little bit behind. I hate to say it, but we are. So I'm here to hopefully serve on that Planning Commission to help enhance that comprehensive plan, to look at the county and see how we can grow as a county. Because I don't want people to move away. I see a lot of young kids. They don't want to stay here anymore because there's nothing to do. Or they're moving, people are moving out of Fluvanna, moving into Louisa because there are things. We need to make sure that there are some amenities here in the county for the people who live here to keep the people here. We also need to thrive in getting people to come into the county. But what do we have in Fluvanna County that people want to come in and see and do? There's not much here. So we need to do a lot of work in this county to get this done. So I have dedicated myself in trying to help the county. I retired from the University of Virginia in the state of Virginia with 35 years of service as a computer application engineer. After I retired, I started working as a volunteer here with the Fluvanna County Sheriff's Office, and I'm still here as a volunteer in police service. I'm constantly looking for ways to help people, not just the county, but people. I'm helping the senior citizens here with our Triad program. I even have organizations who is helping small businesses here, making people aware of who these small businesses. But these small businesses are not going to stay here if we're not offering anything to them. I'm also currently serving on the EDA. I'm looking for ways to help the county. And I hope that y'all will see that in me, that I am here because I am invested in Fluvanna County. So I'm asking for you all to vote and select me. I mean, I'm just as good a candidate as the young lady who just stand here. If I'm selected, that's fine. And if I'm not, that's fine too. But I'm going to continue to fight for Fluvanna County because it is my home. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan. All right, so now the board need to discuss. We've had two.
Do you want to have the Region 10?
Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone for Region
10. I was going to do this first. I was going back to Region 10. You want to do it all at one time? To you all.
I would rather just do the one and then do the other.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So I want to, I knew what was on the agenda, so we will do the Planning Commission first, and then we will have the Region 10.
Madam Chairman, before you start your discussion, one thing that gives me a little concern about Ms. Johnson Morgan. She's obviously very energetic and would be an entirely appropriate member, I think. But her membership on the Economic Development Authority gives me concern because the statute regarding the qualifications for membership on the Planning Commission, it's in section 15.2-2212, appear to limit the local offices that a Planning Commission member can hold. I say it may appear to because it's phrased in the obverse. It doesn't say you can't be a member of the Planning Commission if you do this. It says if you're a member of the Planning Commission, you can also do that. And the two offices mentioned are member of the administrative staff of the county and the member of the Board of Supervisors. Now, Mrs. Eager is a good example of that. she is also a member of the Planning Commission. So we've done it before. The ambiguity is that it doesn't say you can't be a member of this and that. What I'm suggesting is that if the board chooses to pick Ms. Johnson Morgan, and I'm not trying to discourage you from doing that, but it may require her to resign from her position on the Economic Development Authority. So please don't think I'm lobbying in favor or against either candidate.
But it's not clear because I know that there are certain, and I can't quote, I know there are certain positions that you can't, you're serving in one, you can't do the other. But I didn't, and I thought about that, but I didn't go and really research it.
The language.
The language isn't very clear.
The language is not at
it
all
clear. It says appear,
The statute actually reads, one member of the commission may be a member of the governing body of the locality, and one member may be a member of the administrative branch of government of the locality. Now, again, it doesn't say if you have another position, that disqualifies you. But I think the implication of the statute is to have this be citizens who are not otherwise engaged in the county's business.
So you don't have anybody overwhelming or having too many voices and too many
taxes. So I'm inclined to take a very conservative view of things like this because I'm sorry to say this, but procedural defects of any kind are subject to challenge. And I wouldn't want to see good work of the Planning Commission challenged on the basis of pure technicality like this. So I'm just raising the issue for your consideration and for the applicant's consideration too.
Correct me if I'm wrong, the way I had taken it was that there's a potential conflict or double dip in the effect that a person could have on something, because something could go in front of the Planning Commission and the EDA, the same item, correct?
That's a little different issue.
Okay.
That's more like a conflict of interest. Right.
Yeah. But that's, maybe it's wrong, that's what I had taken it as, is I thought it potentially had conflict.
The Conflict of Interest Act is going to cover that. Okay. If there is, in fact, conflict.
You can recuse yourself from a conflict of interest.
I think, as I read the statutes in their entirety, I read this as being an attempt to ensure broader participation. And again, I'm not telling you, I'm not absolutely sure that this would prohibit her from serving, but it may well be that taking a very conservative view of this, if I were taking a very conservative view of this, which I'm likely to do, I think it would mandate that she can have one or the other, but she can't have both. Now, whether she can do things other than the EDA, I'm not commenting on. I'm only commenting on the Planning Commission because it's one of a few entities where the situation is likely to arise. Board of Zoning Appeals is the same way, and it says a member of the Planning Commission can be a member of the Board of Zoning Appeals. It's a different situation, but that's an example.
Well, it sounds like we just need to ask Ms. Johnson Morgan if she is selected, whether or not she would resign from, or whether she has a preference for staying on the
Economic Development
Authority.
Well, to my understanding, my term on the EDA ends in June of this year. So if I am elected on the Planning Commission, I have no problem resigning from the EDA and serving on the Planning Commission.
That's
already
sounds
set,
right?
So,
yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so we just checked. Yeah, it is June.
It's in June, correct.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, if that was the case, then we would just, we would have to appoint someone for the outstanding term of the EDA if she was selected.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we're drawing back to the board now and we're in the mode of discussion so we can make our selection between Mrs. Carolyn Lay and Mrs. Loretta Johnson Morgan.
I would say that, and I talked to Loretta today and Carolyn, both great candidates, and the reason that both of them want to serve, much of it fits much into my mindset and thoughts about the county's future and concerns for the county's future. I believe that with the conflict that we're talking about here, potential conflict, and with the experience that Carolyn has had, in the subdivision and some of the experiences with the Planning Commission and so on, I just don't see where we serve a purpose in disrupting the EDA with somebody who's been giving great service there, and why not have them both serve Flubana and have them on each of those two committees, or committee and commission, or authority and commission.
Anybody else?
Well, I agree with Chris. The more people you have to serve in the different committees, I think it's a good thing. And I've known Carolyn a long time, and I know that about her experience with Planning Commission in Raleigh, and that's kind of how I got involved with local politics, because I had an experience with the Planning Commission. And, anyway, that's what I did.
You know, I think they're both good candidates. I think that the strength of, you know, Mrs. Morgan's, Johnson Morgan's longstanding family history in Columbia, since it is, as I think she aptly put it, you know, focusing on trying to improve the quality for the people, is a really strong statement, a powerful statement, and I see that passion in her. I don't want to say that there isn't that kind of passion in the Planning Commission right now or not, but I just think that there's a certain amount of strength that comes from her positions from that standpoint that would make me want to select her over Ms. Lay, but again, I think they would both do a fine job, so that's my opinion. And of course, it is a Columbia district.
Well, I mean, so it is a Columbia district, and I wish that sometimes somebody would make this easy, and we'd have one candidate that we know we want, and the other candidate we... Yeah, this one's just a little bit better. And this one, I've known Ms. Lay for, I guess, 10 years now, and she's involved, a go-getter. The other one used to chase me around high school and beat me up.
Well, that's all right.
I think I still got a knock back here from where I said something I shouldn't have or something. She whacked me in the back of the head. I feel the pain for her husband. You know, the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm going, we got two great people, we got two boards and commissions, and I think we end up filling one or the other with the other, and I don't.
I'm trying. When you say two commissions,
well,
I'm confused by that.
Organization.
The organization.
Authority
and commission. The Planning Commission.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think if one's on one and one's on the other, I know that there are two talkative people. There are two people that will communicate with one another. So, I mean, I am fine with either one, to be honest with you.
The only challenge I would say is that in terms of the EDA, we would normally go through the nominating process to see what other candidates.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It would be, that, you know, I could walk away tonight and be perfectly fine with putting one on one and one on the other. But that'll be done in June. Yeah, I think she said the term ends in June. So I
would like to go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
Ms. Booker?
No. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, and I've known Loretta since her teenage years, but also I know of what she has done in the county. When we had COVID, she was the leader in bringing vaccinations to this county twice, set it up, did all of that. She also did small business fair, which she brought in 40-some businesses to the high school, and I think she has another one planned for this April. I do not know Mrs. Slay, but I listened to her intensely, and I think I know her just by her describing what she has done. So I know Loretta Morgan more than I know Mrs. Slay, but we have five of us here, so
I think we need to ask one question. We asked Loretta if she would step down.
Yeah.
If she was elected. Ms. Lay, would you be interested in economic development if Ms. Morgan was?
Sure.
So, I mean, I think saying that, asking that question is something irrelevant also.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, why disrupt and make change when we have one on the EDA and we have a qualified person to step into the planning commission? Not that Loretta's not either, but again, with the subdivision experience and so on, why disrupt that? And if the goal is to have one on each, why make a swap when we already have one of those in place?
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort to get up to speed on the planning commission. And Mrs. Morgan is very involved in doing, like you just said, employment affairs, and she's a wonderful person for men, and we all appreciate her very much. And I think that she'll continue to work so hard for the man because she loves it so much. So I would like to put Carolyn on the planning commission and give her an opportunity to serve as well. And that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that I don't think Ms. Morgan would have come forward for the planning commission if she thought she couldn't do both. But then we're finding out that maybe there's a perk there. And I'm not sure we really know if that's really...
I think
it's
Pandora's box.
Yeah,
we just don't want
we
to
really
open
don't.
It. Don't want to risk opening
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I just don't see a reason to do so.
Well, are there limits on the EDA?
As far as what we
not if you can serve consecutively or not?
No, I don't think so. I think we've had people on there serving more than one term.
I don't think they can serve forever. Can they serve two times?
We had up until a while, we had some very long standing individuals on the EDA.
People that were on there for 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, certainly the one thing to keep in mind, I mean, if Ms. Johnson Morgan was selected for the EDA, I mean, like we've been doing with other positions, we would put it out for 30 days and whoever submits for that, we would then bring that slew of candidates back before the board of Athens, before the board.
I think it's a little unfair to cast you know, the fact that she belongs and has been serving on it successfully, and to make that a de facto. So, I mean, I really think, you know, it just comes down to the votes. And, you know, that's what it boils down to. So, you know, I think we all recognize that they're both good candidates. It sounds like Mrs. Eager made a motion for Mrs. Lay. I don't know if you did or did not, but... if you haven't, I'd be happy to make one for Mrs. Morgan.
I was thinking it sounded like a motion, but I wasn't sure.
No, we have a motion. You have one that you put on.
But again, I would always give deference to the Columbia representative. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. We've done that. We usually do that.
Yes, ma'am.
I know that.
And I've got to sit here and make that decision. Thanks.
Yeah. It's hard.
Did I make the motion? Are we all sure about that?
No, I don't think you ever made a motion.
I don't think she officially made a motion. I don't. I didn't. Yeah.
I moved it.
We were trying.
approve. Are you making the motion?
Yes, ma'am.
Someone asked.
But we don't have anything.
It doesn't have to be, but he, somebody is doing it.
I was just wondering technically if that's.
No.
No, but it's standard. It's a preference of the supervisor.
Because I think in Fort Union's case, I made the motion last year for the planning commission.
I would say it's customary for where there's a district appointment to have that supervisor make the motion. But it's not a matter of law.
Policy, yeah.
Well, I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board commissioner committee appointment. If I say any, meeny, miny, mo, I do not laugh. One thing caught my attention, and I've just known it, and it is nothing. I struggle with these decisions. Miss Lay is super intelligent. Miss Morgan's a lifelong resident that I'll nominate Loretta Johnson Morgan.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan and a second by Mr. O'Brien and Ms. Loretta Johnson Morgan be placed on the planning commission for the Columbia District. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, chair votes aye. We have Rita too. And Mr. Redder, Morgan, welcome to the Planning Commission.
So what do we do about the EDA now? Does she immediately have to resign?
She'll have to qualify as a member of the Planning Commission. And if she's going to do it, that's when she should resign. I would say resign promptly so that could be filled.
Yeah, as soon as... I would recommend that if that's the case, she submit a letter to the county, just as she did for probably to myself, to go ahead and put that resignation in, whatever that effective date, probably make it effective immediately. And then this way, the county would then have the EDA opening out there for 30 days, and then we would look to refill that position for the unexpired term.
Please put in an application too.
All right. Okay, thank you. The next one is the Region 10 Community Service Board, Austin Baker and Leslie Woodfall. Is Mr. Austin Baker here?
No.
Okay.
I say that, I'm not sure who on Mr. Baker is, so I couldn't point him out, but so I don't see anyone getting up.
We would have to look at his resume.
I can pull him up if you want.
It's right here.
And
we'll be listed, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Before he goes.
All right.
What's he
got? Did you all see that?
Yeah, we've seen. I read that. And then Leslie Haskins. Now, Leslie has been on, appointed to two boards in tech. Is she still on the Java Advisory Council?
Ms. Harris is looking. She's currently on joint.
It says it on here.
Joint, and she was on the Java Advisory Council.
Yep.
And I don't know.
Yeah, she didn't list on here what board
right.
She's on, but
yes.
It says it right here.
It's on the.
Just read it.
I know
it's on the
one.
It's on the other document.
If you hit the link,
right, and I don't.
It's on there.
I'm thinking that Leslie is not qualified. We had to put her name there because I think that's for application. But I think we only have one, and that would be
Cunningham District, right?
Yeah, so Cunningham District.
Mr. Fairchild would have the honor of that if he so chooses.
Mr. Baker? Yeah, I'd like to look at this and his resume. There's a lot of things that Region 10 would require Pull up Mr. Baker for a minute.
It's a long and distinguished.
Yeah, he says psychology has done a lot with mental health.
Registered qualified mental health.
And I know Leslie, I know she works at the hospital. She doesn't, you know, doesn't have what Region 10 needs. So Mr. Fairchild, any more discussion?
Anybody can. I don't think you need. If you don't have protocol or procedures, then you have to do it that way.
Follow the procedure, Mr.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There is no procedure.
There's customary.
Customary.
Yeah. Go
tradition.
Go ahead.
Okay. We're breaking the tradition. Go ahead.
Board of Supervisors approve Austin Baker to serve on the Region 10 Community Services Board.
All right. Do we have a second?
A second.
All right. We have a motion by Mrs. Eager and a second by Mr. Fairchild and Mr. Austin Baker will serve on the Region 10 Community Services Board. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you all. That was painful, but we made it. Now we have presentation, Three Hill Cemetery. Trish Johnson, Lorraine County Historical Society.
Is it the link?
Are you coordinator director?
Is that the presentation?
Director.
I linked it.
All right.
Officially.
Officially director.
In real life, it depends on what day.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I'm Trisha Johnson. I'm the director of the Flumiana Historical Society. I live at 317 Shannon Hill Road. In Columbia, Mike Sheridan is my representative, but I'd like to claim you all. I'm here tonight to talk to you about Freehill Cemetery, and we have a presentation. I guess you guys have it in front of you, so I'll just kind of scroll through it quickly. I want to add that I brought experts to the party tonight, or an expert, and Mr. Nick Von Harper, who is the senior archaeologist for the Birmingham Archaeological Services, is here. He's going to step forward in a minute and clarify a couple of things for us. He led the field work that's already been done here, so he's the one who knows everything.
And Ms. Johnson, just let me know when you want me to go to.
I will. Slide well, two.
Looking at that picture, go back to that
go
picture,
back to please. That picture? Yes, sir.
That's where I think what you're looking at right there, folks, if you look down the grass and you see there's green. They're about 8 feet tall. I think that's where the pastor was talking about. We found the grave site, the big green bush.
All the way at the back on the left.
That's what you got the picture of right there.
Yeah, it was a huge thicket. And somebody who came to volunteer that day had the right piece of equipment to get into it. And Sam Hancox, Bubba Hancox, got to see the headstones of his grandparents for the first time in several decades. So that was a really moving moment. You were there helping out that day, Mr. Sheridan. Ms. Booker was there as well. Mr. Dahl was there. We appreciate all of you. So the next slide is just a quick glimpse of the 1820 plat of Columbia. Sadly, it didn't show up very well. But to give you an idea, that rectangle is the meets and bounds of the entire town. Originally laid out in 1788, and this is an 1820 copy of the original plat from the Flumiana County Clerk's Office. I show you that so that you can notice that, if you want to go to the next slide, Mr. Dahl, you can see that they're laid out in quadrangles. So there are four parcels per block, and each block is surrounded by planned roads. That's what those gaps are. Look at 37, 38, 53, and 54. That is Freehill Cemetery. The road to the south that runs east and west, labeled C, that's St. James Street or Route 6. The road on the western boundary that runs north-south, labeled G, that's Tammany. E and H are two roads that were never built, but they are still there. One thing that we have been able to, and I'm shortening this because your things have run long so far today, so I'm trying to be mindful of your time. The next slide, David Ross gave this parcel a deed of gift to the town of Columbia in 1805. And over the years, there was apparently a school and a church there on that parcel. And it was gradually given over to be a cemetery, but it has been since 1805, a cemetery for a remarkable community of free people of color who lived in Columbia for emancipation. From 1801 to 1850, the annual taxation records document more than 500 free people of color living in Columbia. That's the extent of those records, so that's literally all we know. In 1870, Columbia Baptist Church purchased, and Mr. Dahl, if you'll go back one to slide three, and that's the one, the close-up of the plat. If you look at 3, 4, 19, and 20, that's owned by Columbia Baptist Church. Their church and modern cemetery are there. So skip ahead again, Mr. Dahl. Sorry for that. In 1870, Columbia Baptist Church bought two of those parcels at a later date. They bought the other two. So that parcel has been in use by the Columbia Baptist Church, and you can understand why everybody sort of assumed generally that the cemetery belonged to them. The next slide with the inscribed headstone. The ownership of the cemetery was legally acknowledged by the town council in 1879. The state of Virginia required that new ordinances be drafted for each town in which the towns took responsibility for the maintenance and development of publicly held property. In Columbia, that included the cemetery and the roads themselves. That's acknowledged in the 1879 ordinances. And that ordinance actually identifies the cemetery using those town lot numbers. So we know for sure that's what they were talking about. In 1965, Columbia Town Council minutes record their intention to go to Free Hill and to log Free Hill and use that money from the sale of pulpwood to pay for their road development plans. A careful search of land records from around that time found that no easements were purchased. We wanted to double check and make sure that the county perhaps didn't have to purchase easements for the development of roads there. They did not. They owned it all. They didn't get an easement to cut timber off of Free Hill Cemetery because they owned it. So that's the proof of ownership. And this next slide, Mr. Von Harper, if you care to join me, please. This next slide talks about the is actually a map that Mr. Von Harper devised after archaeological study. And I think he's going to chat with you for a minute about explaining what this map is and why we are interested in the parcels that we are, if you don't mind, sir.
The marks on the map are surface indications that we located in the field when we were doing the survey, either headstones or slumps where a grave has become depressed over time. Some of the graves have headstones, many do not. As you can probably see, they're widely dispersed across all four lots, especially along the northern edge. And I think one of the points that Tricia is getting at is that the roads that bound the cemetery on the north and the east were graded in the 60s and potentially have impacted burials that were beyond the formal boundaries.
Essentially serving as a
buffer. Right. Yeah. And it was the idea being that those road lines would be included in the parcels to provide a buffer.
Yeah. Do you want to go to the next slide, Mr. Dahl? Because that one, I believe, shows. Oops, no, that's. Well, never mind. Thank you. Sure. You'll be here for questions if you have them. So the next slide, and I'm sorry I popped this one out of order. I was really excited because I just got it this morning. We did testing with GPR, ground penetrating radar, at two test sites, Free Hill Cemetery. These are preliminary results, and they have not yet been compared to the map created by Nick that showed the graves that were that you could locate by observation of surface features. So we don't know exactly how many more have been located. I'll know that in another week or so. But a casual look by the principal of Ravenna Archaeology this morning, his observation was that there were quite a few found. Certainly in the long rectangular area, which is that clear area, Mike, that you were talking about. And then the smaller rectangle is the one that we're really interested in because that's in a wooded area. And the question was how effective GPR would be in the wooded area. We think we have our answer. It looks as if it may have been. So GPR work throughout the entire cemetery is feasible, and we need to get grant funding for that. The next slide, please. This is a parcel overlay of the 1820 town plat. And this gives you an idea of the four squares, and then the road traces. The next one is an enlargement of that, Mr. Dahl, so you have a better look. The road on the northern boundary that's been bulldozed in but was never fully constructed is Cameron. The road to the east that was bulldozed in 1965 but never constructed would have been Green had it ever been made. So what we are here today to ask is that this board and the county move forward with donating lots 37, 38, 53, 54, and the road trace, Cameron, and Green to Columbia Baptist Church to pass that on to the ownership. Next, please. That's the technical aspect of this. We're going to get a little personal here now. These are three people that we believe are buried at Free Hill Cemetery, just to help you put faces to those unmarked and lost burials. The large image to the right is Smith Harris. Mr. Harris was born in 1820, enslaved by the Pettit family, grew up next to Ravenna Mills. He was the coach driver for the Pettit family when he was enslaved. After emancipation, he became the ferryman at Columbia and managed the ferry across the James River for decades. The picture at the top is Horatio Cousins. Horatio was also born around 1820. He was a born free person of color in the town of Columbia, and he was a hostler. He actually rented out horses and buggies and ran a livery stable in Columbia and in Palmyra. And the last image, which is a little small because the original picture is tiny, is America Smith. She was enslaved, and she lived after emancipation in Columbia with her husband, raised five children. And all that I can tell you about America Smith is that the back of this little tiny photograph we have in our archives is written, America Smith, who we also loved as children. So these are some of the people that are buried there. The next slide is David Ross, the founder of the town, testifying to the free status of John Cousins, who lived there. That's just to give you an idea, that's one document. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of documents documenting the free community of color in Columbia. It is a rich and deep history. Historians from North Carolina, Richmond, and beyond are now currently studying that community with an eye towards writing books. So this community is garnering attention, as it should. The next slide. 1965, disrespect and damage by the Columbia Town Council. The 1936 WPA report by a historian indicated that there were stones brought up from the river at the head of every sleeper, meaning that every grave was marked with a fieldstone marker. There are very few fieldstone markers in this cemetery. It was one of the first things that caught our attention. The council's decision to log this parcel, which they knew was a cemetery for black people in 1965, for financial gain, was a disgraceful and disrespectful act of racial discrimination. It continues to cause pain in this community today. And when I say this community, I don't only mean the residents of Columbia. There are descendants of people buried in that cemetery across this county. Everywhere I go, you know, I have an ancestor buried in Columbia. You know, my great-grandmother was buried there. You know, my great-uncle, we know he's buried there. And these families have stories that elders today will tell you about remembering when the cemetery was logged and graded and how appalled and horrified the black community was. Still causing pain to people today. Your constituents, the people that you represent, whether it's Columbia or elsewhere in the county. So what can you do? At the request of Columbia Baptist Church members and other descendants of people buried at Free Hill, we plan to submit an application for a grant fund that just became available to pay for ground penetrating radar on this entire site, as well as fencing, the creation and installation of a congregate memorial listing all those names that Nadine Armstrong is working so hard to put together right now. Perhaps markers at the head of each grave, just a simple marker so that we don't lose those burials again once they've been identified. Historical interpretive signage. This grant funding includes a requirement that the property either be owned by the church or that we can prove that there is the intent for the church to obtain the property. And after speaking with DHR, our understanding is that what we need is a letter of intent from the county saying that it is your intention to grant this property to Columbia Baptist Church. Mr. Payne's going to have some thoughts on that in a minute, but I'm going to finish up before that, Mr. Payne, just because I can. The next slide, what could the Board of Supervisors do? It lays this out again. The one after that, there's some folks you might know. It's community-led projects to study, respect, and preserve Freehill Cemetery. It builds community. Here's some more folks you know. They all came together on one day and will again to continue to work to clear that cemetery and to respect the people that lie at rest there. Lastly, this project deserves our attention and support. So I'm here for questions. Comments? Yes, ma'am. Mr. Payne, you have thoughts?
Occasionally. I do have some thoughts, and I don't want anything that I say to evidence my feelings one way or the other, except to say that the Historical Society and its partners have done an exceptionally good job of researching the history of the property. The questions are, to my mind, are technical. And that is because of the peculiar nature of the early deed, the 1805 deed, it's not technically complete as to some aspects that certainly I would put in a deed if I were doing it today. There's ambiguity about exactly what was done to it, and so what the county's interest in is in it. That being the case, I think that I would recommend to the county that if you're inclined to do this, I would do it with a quitclaim deed rather than anything else. But I'm not quite through. The second issue is that I would recommend against conveying property to the church. And the reason for that is that those of you that studied Virginia history know that Virginia has always been, since the Revolution, intensely anti-clerical. Virginia had an established church before the Revolution. And thereafter, Virginia's development, political development, was marked by hostility not to religion, but to religious institutions. I would call that anti-clerical. The result of that is that there's a statute which still exists, and in fact has been recently amended because of the decision of the United States Supreme Court, permits counties to make donations to certain nonprofit organizations. One was mentioned in there's the Boy Scouts. And Mrs. Booker, unless you think it was a sexist thing, they also approved the Girl Scouts. But the problem is that the statute mentions in two separate places that authority does not authorize donations to sectarian entities. The issue was, when I saw this issue come up in the Supreme Court a few years ago, it came up and didn't come in Virginia, it came up in another state. I was concerned about the constitutionality of that statute as inconsistent with the anti-establishment provisions of the federal constitution. The Supreme Court, I think it was Connecticut, the other case came up, and which was another very much real thin line between church and state. And what the Supreme Court did was it said the process that you, the project that you all are doing is improvements to playgrounds, on playgrounds generally, public schools, private schools, and things like that. And one of the plaintiff was a church, and the town denied the application of this project to their playground because they were sectarian. And the United States Supreme Court didn't say you couldn't distinguish between sectarian and non-sectarian, but it did say that to the extent that you have a project that does not involve the sectarian nature as such. In other words, it didn't come out and say, we'll print up the town will print up the publications for the church, something like that. That would be impermissible. But if you have something that's non-religious in nature and applies generally to all the other properties in the county, you can't fail to apply them to the sectarians. And so the church in Connecticut got its playground improvements. The General Assembly was aware of that decision and added language to the statute, which is consistent with the federal Supreme Court's decision. But this is not a project of general application in the county. This is not like, you know, building sidewalks across the county or improving roads or something like that. This is specifically for what I would call the ministry of the church. And based on that, I think there's a very strong possibility that this decision would be that giving the property to the church directly might well be held to be a violation of that statute. Now, if you will, that's the bad news. The good news is that there are a couple of ways that you might be able to get around that, one of which would be to convey it to a non-sectarian entity like the Historical Society. Now, if thereafter the Historical Society wanted to convey it to the church, I don't see any impediment to that. What I'm saying to you is there's a sort of a policy decision, and that is, if you're free to do so, would you favor giving this property for the use of the church? You don't talk about who's going to use it, but you would favor doing that. But there are technical problems that would need to be resolved. The second of which is, assuming you can make the conveyance to anybody, the Historical Society, for example, there would have to be a public hearing. And that's general law of county properties. The third is that these public streets were dedicated by the plat to public use. And to abandon them, there's a specific procedure that you need to go through to abandon them. And then a procedure, that's a different statute, but there's a procedure for conveying off abandoned roads. And I think that would have to be followed too. So there's a lot of details to be worked out. If you approve the conveyance in principle, I would recommend strongly that it be by quitclaim, because we haven't done a conventional title examination on this, and there may be other issues. Hopefully, they would be elucidated by the public hearings. So, I don't want to be the wet blanket that says you can't do that. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there are issues complicated.
You have definitely elucidated us.
Right.
I've succeeded.
May I say something quickly too about that? It's to bring us back to the point that what we're asking you for tonight is a letter stating that it is your intention to
divest this from county ownership and see that it gets to the church. Or to us and then the church. It's a letter of intention. It's not a legally binding document. Nobody's going to come back in a year and smack you.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Does it have to say that, that their intent to give it to the church?
This grant wants...
Because that sounds like to me that's the conflict that we're talking about.
Well, it's a letter of intent. It's not a contract and it's not an act. So what we're asking for is a letter. But I do believe you could say that it's your intention to convey it to us, if that makes it easier to swallow, and then we can attach a letter saying that we will give it immediately to the church.
If that would suit the grant, I think you could do it by saying something like quitclaim to an appropriate nonprofit entity for preservation and maintenance of the church.
We had the same situation with the little New Falk High School at New Falk.
Yes, ma'am.
Drum and I owned that property. We gave it to the New Falk Church. The Historical Society had gotten at least $15,000 worth of grant money to restore the first high school while S.C. Abrams was being built. They were going to the Perry Fund to get additional funding, and the Perry Fund would not give it to the church, to a religious establishment.
Right.
So the Historical Society went to the church and asked them to quit claim that to them, to you all,
right,
and then you would restore the building and then you would give it back to the church. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're saying. So we've had that situation before, but the church would not release it. I mean, the church couldn't come to an agreement because they thought, well, the Historical Society is going to take our property and we'll never get it back. And I'm saying, they don't want it.
Yeah, let me assure you, we don't want
it. We don't want it. They don't want to upkeep it and so forth. So we can never get through that mentality of some organization coming and taking our property and we may not get it back. I don't think that Columbia Church is in that frame of mind.
No, I think we've chatted about that. I don't know that you haven't had a... Have you had an official vote on it yet? You did.
We did.
They did. So it is...
They're willing to.
They're willing to... If the county needs to give it to us in order to make it work, they understand that we will immediately deed it to them.
Would that satisfy the grant if we did a letter to the Historical Society?
Yes. If we followed it up with a letter saying that it's our intention to turn it over.
What date is the grant due?
Yeah, the grant application is due the 15th. And that's why we're here. And before people yell at me about procrastination, not that I'm not capable of it, but they literally just announced this grant. By the way, it is a state grant. It's the Commonwealth's new BIPOC fund.
So my concern, and I see no reason why the county would not want to do so. I think it's a great thing to do so. I guess I'm asking Fred, I mean, we're verbally acknowledging that we're going around the system.
No, we're not.
We're getting into the Historical Society.
No, we've stated verbally that we understand that that is a pass-through to get to the church.
You don't have to do that officially. And who knows? Somebody might change their mind. So I think the point is, if you convey it to the Historical Society, the Historical Society then could do whatever they wanted with it. They would have to keep up with the restrictions, because there is a restriction on the use of this property for eleemosynary uses. I forget exactly the language.
Yeah, and it's actually also going to end up listed, or we're through the process. We have informal confirmation from some experts at DHR. They believe that the property is eligible for listing on the National Register. So we are in the process of doing that. And that makes, in terms of development or any kind of monetary value, that would make that property worthless. Moved. So it is not that the county is conveying a dollar amount of value to anyone.
Yeah, but
you're actually relieving yourself of responsibility because
I agree with that, but the statute that he was reading doesn't seem to care about whether what the value of the property is. And I mean, we are clearly acknowledging that we understand it's going to be a pass-through to you all. As long as the county attorney says it's okay, then I'm fine with it. And I can't imagine who would, I guess it should be speaking to the board. Whoever, I can't imagine who in the world would come contest this or create an issue over it. But if somebody did and somebody came back to this recording, are they going to be very aware that we understand where this property is going to end up lying as far as ownership? It'd be really hard to make an argument that we're not.
Well, I see what you're saying, but that's not your official action. Your official action is that you, when you get around to it, not tonight, when you get around to it, that the deed, this quitclaim deed, goes to the Historical Society, subject to the existing restrictions, which are, I don't remember the exact language, yeah, but it was basically designed as an intent to have the town establish sort of a religious and primarily education facility. That's why I said there's all kinds of ambiguities in this whole deed. But whatever you do can always be challenged. I think the likelihood that it would be challenged is low in any event, but it's much lower if you simply do the transaction, take it out of the county's ownership. The Historical Society is not bound by that statute. They can do whatever they want. That's not up to you. And if the Historical Society, for example, decided to convey it to the Virginia Historical Society, they'd be free to do so.
When did we find out that we actually owned the cemetery?
Is the date inscribed in your heart, Mr. Dahl, that I came to your office and said, hi, guess what, you own the cemetery?
How long ago did we find out we owned the cemetery?
Gosh, I mean,
2 years ago?
I don't think it's been
we didn't that even long. Find out when we took over the township.
It's when we discovered that book and went through it and
less
found
than a year ago?
The minutes from 1879 that said, yes, sir.
I'm not, yeah. I don't want an exact date.
You don't want to ask me about time.
Making the point of it's less than a year that we actually found out that.
Right.
And we didn't purchase it. We just
came with the town.
Got given to us.
We didn't even know.
We didn't know anything about it. And, you know, yeah, it's the right thing to do.
Okay. Any more discussion?
No, I just found that the town knew about it because they voted.
Yeah. 65.
So.
Okay. So are we in the agreement to go forward? This is not an action. This is just information, right?
Well, I mean,
but we do have.
It's teeing up an action of the next meeting.
Yeah.
We can write a letter to the Historical Society.
Yeah, I guess.
I
need that like in 10 days. Grant.
I guess if the board.
What you may want to do is if you want to get it going is to direct the staff to meet with the Historical Society and draft an appropriate response letter of intent, and then you can ratify that on the 15th.
Okay. Is this agreeable with everyone?
She needs it before the 15th.
Yeah, I need it before the 15th.
So we could just have a special meeting on the 8th.
Well, when we have a meeting next week. We
need a letter. Do we have to ratify the letter?
You're going to have to.
Yeah. Okay.
You're going to have to. Right.
So we'll just do a special meeting on the 8th.
Unless you want to empower the county administrator.
That works too.
Yeah, that works too.
You could do that.
If we're in agreement.
Otherwise, were you going to be here next week?
He's generally not here for just work sessions.
But he would have to.
He could.
Yeah. If we were having a special meeting, he'd have to.
That's
what
I'm saying.
I think the board has made formal actions before. I mean, it's very few and far between when Fred's been not present. I mean, they've been very
And certainly, I think Fred has been apprised to those things that have made come about.
It's a non-binding letter of intent, and if you send it to us, you don't hear back from any of us, you can see if it's okay.
Yeah, so we're kind of giving it Eric the authority.
Anyone?
Everybody understand we're giving Eric that authority. He's going to send us a letter. We're going to agree on it.
Yeah, and listen, I'll work between Mr. Payne and Ms. Johnson, and I'll send it to the board. And
all right. Thank you.
Thank you all. No, ma'am. Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in.
Mr. Ballenharper.
I see you have your support system sitting next to you.
Thank you very much for your understanding.
All right, we're going to go through the consent agenda. E is minutes of February 15, 2023. F is minutes of February 22, 2023. G is CRMF call water leak from the school system of CAL water leak.
Yeah, Carisbrook.
That's Carisbrook leak, right?
Yeah, Carisbrook.
Roofing, I guess. All right, and then H is fiscal year 23 pay rates and classifications. I approval of open space agreement for Andrew J. Mills and Carol A. Mills, and then approval of open space agreement with David J. and Becky L. Peterson. Anyone would like to pull anything from the consent agenda? If not, can we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second, please.
Second.
It's been motioned by Mr. Wright and second by Mrs. Peter that we approve the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Mike, where are you?
You have to step away.
Okay. Chair approved and one stepped away. Okay, unfinished business. BOS boards and commissions. Do you have a list?
Yeah, this is just something that.
All right, would you check where you are and just make sure that we are in the right boards and commissions? Anybody want to switch or anything that they don't feel like?
Well, just to bring a couple things to the board's attention. One, we have some automatic changes by the fact that the chair of the board changed. So again, Mr. Sheridan was the finance board chair. And again, the finance board chair is always the chair of the board of supervisors. So by fact of Chair Booker now the chair, she would then be the chair of the finance board. I think that is the only one. I guess the only other one is from a legislative contact, VACO, the contact for VACO from a legislative piece has always been the chair of the board. And so that's one other thing.
Yeah, but I think Sheridan's on the board.
I was going to say, I'm on the board of directors. Yeah, that if you want me to stay as the contact with VACO, I could stay there.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Anything else?
Mr. Sheridan asked me to go to the mayor's and chair's meeting because it's in Charlottesville.
I attended that one, you know.
I didn't have to take a day off every day?
Yeah, right. And I went to the first one. And they don't have that many.
And I apologize for walking down, but I wanted to talk to the gentleman. There's a grave down there that sunk really bad, almost washed out, and there was one that Dad did. Okay. And I don't, you know, if it's there, I want to fix it.
Okay.
We're going to find
it. Anything else on this? Everybody okay? And we don't have any new business, so I'm going to. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know if this is much to be brought up, and this is just Robert's rules of order. So, it was a fine vote. But back to the planning commission, you know, we kind of got in the thing of what's tradition and what's order. And I believe Trish had said I'll make a motion, and then was held off from making that motion. And I think that was an error.
Yeah, what happened? Yeah, she said.
I don't actually think she said the word motion.
Yeah.
I don't actually think she said that.
Do you remember, Trish?
But it'll be in the recording.
Yeah, you know, we have it recorded.
I don't think she used the word motion either. That's the only reason I said it.
It wouldn't affect the action anyway, because Mrs. Eager
pretty clearly withdrew the motion I think Mr. Sheridan actually made a formal motion.
But can the chair, if somebody was to say, I make a motion, can the chair say, hold on, if she withdrew hers as a result of that, then that would be because the chair said, hold on.
Well, that may be. She has the right not to allow the chairman to say that. Chairman would then have to rule for some reason her motion is out of order. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the motion would be entitled to be addressed and either seconded or not.
So, but a chair can say, let's say a motion had, I'll make a motion, the chair can say, no, don't make that motion?
I wouldn't say, I couldn't say, don't make the motion, but I think Mike is, because I don't think she heard it when.
Yeah, Mike was in the process of deciding.
This is a nuance here, but this is, if the chairman comes up and rules on it, that's one thing. If she doesn't rule on it, and, you know, if you will, makes a suggestion to the member and the member agrees to it, that is.
So any of us could do that then? Any of us could say, but if somebody said, I'll make a motion, any of us could suggest after those words that they don't make that motion.
If you want the most technical answer possible, you're not to speak unless you're recognized. Now, clearly that's not the way this board does business.
Right. We don't.
I'm just trying to, I've got a clear question though. Is that something that's open in our process that we can say, once somebody's made a motion, then one of the rest of us can stop that motion from happening and then us move away from it?
The member can't say, Mrs. Eager, you're not allowed to make this motion. The member can't do that. Now, if Mrs. Booker, as the chairman, made a ruling on it, for example, Mrs. Eager, you haven't taken the oath of office, and therefore you're not eligible as a member to make a motion, therefore I rule the motion out of order.
But you, I mean, in the that, scenario that we have here that happened.
That's not the scenario we had here. And you need to be very careful about asking me to tell you what I think the technical rules are, because this board is, the procedure is, I think, commendably informal. If you're going to go through the technical aspects of it, there should be nobody speaking until the motion is made and either seconded or killed.
And so how would we discuss it if for the board to hear it?
You discuss it after the motion is made and seconded. That's the conventional way to do it.
So either way, we'd have this conversation in front of the public.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm just saying, whether we're having it now or if I'd have brought it up after the technicality of it, the concern of bringing up the technicality of it, would still be there.
And I hope I didn't get on anybody's nerve, but the only person that said motion in the beginning was Tom. And that was the first words that came out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I said, in that case, I'm going to move, and then I stopped.
I stopped and said,
well, it's not my... Due to tradition, if you would, I said, no, really, it's Mr. Sheridan's motion.
Yeah, I've told you this before. There's a number of things that, according to the pure letter of Robert's rules and the established rules of procedure, this board doesn't follow. Mm-hmm. One of them is that you don't address the motion until it's made and seconded. Mm-hmm. And if you go and look at a lot of other bodies, General Assembly, for example, or the Congress, a member stands up and makes a motion, the presiding officer then calls for a second. If there is no second, he rules it to have died for want of a second, is there another motion? We don't do it that way, because it's a small group, it's much more collegial and informal. You get the same place, and the substance of it, of the rules is honored.
I think it is a good practice, and you've mentioned that before. You get the motion and second, and then there may be additional discussion.
I do too, by the way, because that seems...
called at that point if there's any additional discussion. And sometimes we do that, sometimes.
I agree with that, because we could have a whole bunch of discussion that there's not even a second for, so why are we discussing?
So we'll try to work on motion second, and then if there's any additional discussion.
I'm not trying to shut down the informality.
No.
Within limits, I think it's very helpful.
Always, you know, you can always get better, or you can, you know, you want to do it right.
I'm just a policy and procedure minded person, so, and the way my mind works is that there's a process, and especially when things can be challenged.
Just remember, I'm the by your rules, I'm the parliamentarian. If you want me to start cracking the whip, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But I will do it only because I'm ordered to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So make sure we go for a discussion after the second, Mr. Payne. Flashing on our board. Discussion. That'll make people feel better.
Madam Chair, on new business, I just want to acknowledge the letter from Sycamore Square Property Owners Association, Mr. Charles White. He actually spoke to me at a meeting the other day and mentioned, you know, that there's a fair amount of speeding that's going on. There are a lot of people working on the street there, a lot of kids and so on. So to the degree that we can encourage VDOT to do some traffic calming there, that would be ideal.
So I've also had a communication with Mr. White. I've had communication with VDOT. I know Mr. White, I believe, has had communication with the sheriff's office as well. So there are a couple things without getting too deep in the weeds. I know one, there was a discussion of potentially some of the, what I had said is are there anything within the HOA covenants that are not being enforced right now? For instance, if there's issues in the roadways, because there was mention brought up of vehicles parking in the roads. Well, if the HOA covenants say vehicles shouldn't park in the roads or can't park in the roads, is the HOA doing something first before the county gets involved with the resources to make sure that vehicles aren't parking in the road, for instance? From a VDOT standpoint, I had a brief conversation with Scott Thornton, and I drove through Sycamore Square recently too. Some of the mailboxes almost are overhanging in the road too. So there could be something to be said that potentially maybe the HOA would want to then have the mailboxes moved further off of the road. I mean, those are just a few things. I mean, certainly the county can say, well, you know, we want to use our VDOT funding to do a traffic study or a safety study, but I think there are some other things first that maybe the HOA maybe needs to look at. And then if the issue still is there, and again, you know, the sheriff's office is doing patrols, and if the issue is still there, then maybe the county does need to be involved. But again, those are just some of my initial thoughts, but I'm happy to hear any.
I'm just sitting here thinking about that blue line that always comes to Bishop. The group that does the speed studies at schools, things of that nature. If that would be a thing for them to contact them, do they do it in subdivisions?
I'm also reminded in all this about when Village Gardens was being looked at, and all the discussion about Nahor Village and the concerns of slowing down traffic there, and it was talked about with the bumps, though, the speed bumps, parking, everything. And I feel, if I remember right, I feel like the county is pretty clear that we couldn't participate, and that would be up to the Nahor Village to put in their own traffic speed bumps.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a VDOT street, and VDOT is generally not, speed bumps are a last resort down the line for them to put that in. I think if there are some low-hanging fruit there for enforcement mechanisms that the HOA has in place, I think those should be looked at first before the county gets involved. I mean, certainly, you know, I mean, the sheriff's office, from a speeding standpoint, certainly the sheriff's office can monitor that. It's a VDOT road, and so that's kind of well within their purview. But but from doing a speed study or things like that before some of the other things are maybe looked at. I don't know, those are just some of my thoughts on it.
Just wanted to acknowledge, just make sure that we were.
Yeah, we can acknowledge it. I mean, because that, everything that's said right there, the Ken Store.
Sure.
Doesn't have to be a subdivision. And sure. This morning I pulled up, and don't ask me why, I know I bring y'all horror stories all the time, but I come up to a T intersection, and the parent decided to park on the opposite side of the road. So I said, this is going to be dangerous. So I pulled my bus as far up as I could to make sure the child had enough safe room to go between me and the car. Mm-hmm. I got my reds on. I'm sitting there parked in the middle of the road. As the child crosses the front of my bus, a car is parked. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching the child get up on the bus, and I pick my head up, and the car is wiggling between my crossing arm and the car that's sitting there instead of just waiting 10 seconds for me to shut the door.
Did you take their license plate?
Ma'am, like I said, I mean, they stopped.
I
was like, okay, they're stopped. So I'm watching the kid get on the bus. Mm-hmm. And I picked my head up, and the car is sitting right there. And after it passes, man, I ain't going to read that number.
It also occurs to me that, you know, when doing something for one, now you've got Fox Hollow.
You open up the door for every subdivision. Kent Farms North,
It's a VDOT decision at the end of the day, right? Yeah. So it's just whether or not we're...
Well, there is a decision by the county. I mean, because the county does get funding that is kind of allocated to it for these engineering studies. So when the board says we want to move forward with an engineering study, speed study, things like that, that is... county's allocation to do these types of different things. So
because we just did the one from Broken Island or
correct Delta. Yeah, I mean so those, I mean, it's not coming out of the county's, you know, pockets per se, but it's coming out of county's allocation for other types of things that we want to do. So that's just something
I just wanted to say. I don't think you have to have a mailbox close enough that the mail carrier can put it in without getting out of it.
Correct, but from what I understand, the post is right up next to the curb, mm-hmm. and where the mailbox then is almost hanging over into the road a little bit. So, I mean, that's...
Between those and trash cans, don't even get me started on trash cans or pick up trash bag.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. You don't want it too far back, but there's that fine line, I think, and it's probably a fine line of inches.
I would have them reach out possibly to that blue line. Because
okay.
I know that they talked about doing, I think they do residential areas, and that might be something that they could have them come in and, if they want to crack down on it as a community, that could possibly be something. I can't remember the exact rules of it, but it's called Blue Line.
Okay.
It's a group that's retired police officers. They put up speed signs to warn you. Then they issue you a warning, and the third thing is writing a ticket to make people slow down.
Okay. Madam Chair, there was one other thing you wanted to bring up about the Central Virginia Regional Housing Partnership.
Oh, yes. The Central Virginia Housing Partnership, they're having their second conference on March the 24th. And they sent out, you don't have that letter there.
So what they did is they're looking for sponsorships.
We were the only
county
that
did it last
year.
The last time
they did it was, I don't remember what year, it was probably a couple years ago.
I think it was $500 at that time.
It is.
The least expensive one is $1,000.
It is. There's different partnership sponsors, $1,000 being the cheapest, then there's $2,500, then there's $5,000, and so you had brought that up, so just remind me.
So I wanted to know if we wanted to sponsor that conference this time. I'm on the voting board, and I've been to a couple of meetings. It's pretty huge, the whole region, and I know that Mrs. G, when she was here, she was very active in a lot of those committees. And they've done a lot of work, and I feel like we probably don't know everything that they are doing. They've made a lot of progress, but maybe any of you all signed up for the conference. There's something on the 23rd, they're going to meet with some which I'm not familiar with, but the first one that I attended, the first one they had was very informative. That was the beginning of looking at affordable housing, and they go into other areas as well. And of course, the COVID kind of slowed things down. But they've done some good work. So I was just wondering if we wanted to be a sponsor, would be listed on the program. It just says to them, we want to be involved.
Okay. How much is it?
$1,000.
What have they done for Fluvanna?
Fluvanna is well represented. They've looked at housing, they've looked at how many affordable housing are here in Fluvanna, they look at what kind of rent we pay. They do look at us. We don't have as much as they look at the other areas, Louisa, Charlottesville, and Albemarle. But they include us in everything that they do. Now, when you say, what have they done for us, I don't think they can't do anything. I mean, they can suggest. They can be involved in some decision making that we make. They can open our eyes to what we already have and the things that we need to do. They are a resource for us. They can study certain areas for us. But as for what have you done for me, I don't know.
They should give us the information that they've collected on our rents and of what we have that's affordable.
I think it is in. We have had it somewhere.
Yeah, they did a big report, and it was finalized in April of 2021, yeah. I believe.
And you know, we canceled. Keith Smith was coming. Remember the time Keith Smith was going to come and make a presentation? And what's the guy's Ned Galloway. Was a part of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, and our meeting was that early, and he didn't think Mr. Galloway would be able to get here. Plus, we were giving him 10 minutes. They have been presenting at least a half an hour. They have been going back to counties, and it may have been Nelson County, have asked them to come back because they do have some interesting information that I think we need to know about that information. So are we supposed to reschedule Keith and them to come and talk to us? Now, whether that's going to be before the 24th, I doubt it. They wanted to have just a special meeting with us because they had so much to share. And they've been going around to all of the boards presenting this information. So that's about all that I know.
I might go to it. I just don't know if I'll be in town, so I'm gonna wait till the end. You know, we're at we've advertised a 9-cent increase, and I already have people saying to me exactly the number $1,000. Hey, how come, especially when times are tight, you're giving that $1,000 to this organization and not us? And I say, I hear you. And so it might just be $1,000, but again, there's other organizations. And I have a hard time saying, when we're advertising a 9-cent increase, that we should give money in additional places.
I really don't think that $1,000 will hurt us. I think it's going to be a plus instead of a minus.
Well, it would come out of the board's contingency fund.
Yeah, it's a plus instead of a minus.
I think their efforts have been primarily to educate both the community and public officials and related department, related organizations, about housing, different approaches to housing, how to take advantage of different programs. And so, they are providing a value-added service to the general area here. And I know that they put a lot of work into what they do, and that the actual forum that they had, which was very successful and well attended in 2001.
I was just going to say quick, wherever the money comes from, whether the contingency fund or whatever, as I know the whole board understands, it's still the taxpayers'
sure.
dollars.
Absolutely. And to that end, I would say that this is an organization that's focusing on housing, which is, of course, one of the most important things that we do in general.
This year, I just think it's tight. And Ms. Booker, you said they've been to other boards. We were the only ones that gave them $500 money last time, and we should have been the first ones they went to.
And that was 20 years ago.
No, I was on the board. I'm pretty sure. Mr. Dahl?
I don't remember when.
What's that?
It was just a couple of years ago.
It was a couple of years
there,
ago.
That first conference?
Yeah, we did.
I don't think it was a couple of years ago.
Ma'am, Mr. O'Brien and I voted on it. Miss Eager did.
Yeah, I think we did.
We all voted on it.
I know we gave $500, but I don't remember what year it was.
About 2 years ago, three years ago. So I'm just, this year, with the way we got it, I don't see it right now.
I'm just hoping that when we go and that we see everybody else has given something, Savannah County has given nothing.
It wasn't last year. 2 years ago.
I don't know what year it was. That first conference, I could text Keith later on when I have some time. I'll find out when the first conference was.
Well, if other counties are contributing, you know, then we can reconsider, I guess.
Yeah, I guess we could. I'll bring it up again when I find out what other counties. We may still get a no, but I'm going to still push forward.
Yes, ma'am. I would feel bad if you didn't. I think something was wrong.
We need to take some responsibility.
So, Madam Chair, just a little housekeeping. So it's after 7 right now. We've got closed session items, and we've got a work session that was supposed to start at 7. So trying to get some direction from the board. I mean, I certainly know that some of the closed session topics won't be super quick, and I know there's folks here, so I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
You want to pick a time that we'll be back?
What time is it? It is now 7:09. So can we get through this and be back at 7:30?
We won't finish all of it.
I don't think so.
You know what? In some way, we need to.
We could do it after.
Yeah, we've had this situation too many times. Mm-hmm. There's something, it needs to be a better solution. What can we do differently that we don't leave people sitting out here half an hour, 15 minutes, when they come expecting us to be out here at 7? A little late, fine. So what can we do? Y'all smart.
The chair is supposed to keep order and
keep us
moving.
I can't keep y'all from talking.
What did we just talk about?
Well, my suggestion would be not to put it all off until the end, because we need to go get something to eat. Unless we're just going to go without dinner.
It's 10 after 7.
If we came back, it went till closed session until 7:30.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to come? Okay, we're going to come back at 7:30.
Whatever.
Right?
7:30.
We can't finish.
No, we'll have to go back at the end. But I'm saying, we can get done some while we're back here.
Yeah.
I had an Uncrustable at 11 o'clock, ma'am. I'm going to be eating inside of my stomach.
But anyway, let's think about this, though, and so we don't hang in this thing. I can come up. You want me to come up with a way?
There's only one way to do it.
What?
Well, you have to just go to Spain.
All right.
Nobody talks without being recognized by the chairman, and you're not going to do that.
We don't do that. We have a freedom of...
Minutes are ticking. Madam Chair, I move the Florida County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A7, Section 2.2-3711A19 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, county attorney position, litigation, Gate Plaza LLC, which is Savannah County Board of Supervisors, and public safety, Kent's store, firehouse incident.
Okay, do we have a second? All right, motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sheridan, that we go into closed session. All in favor? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session. I'm sorry.
That's right, ma'am. agenda was moved that we recess from our closed meeting where we have discussed section 2.2-3711A1 and have yet to discuss section 2.2-3711A7 or section 2.2-3711A19.
Okay. All in favor? Second. All right, motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Sheridan. All in favor?
No.
Anyone
one by
opposed?
One by one.
Oh, I Chris calling
aye.
Patricia?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien? Mrs. Sheridan?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Okay, thank you all for waiting so patiently. I think we have a few people that are still here that are not staff. Okay, Mr.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, this is an opportunity, one, just for a brief moment, if there's any county departments that want to advocate for things that maybe were not in their budget or I didn't include in my budget necessarily from a just funding standpoint. I see Mr. Hickman, Mr. Spitzer, I don't know if Ms. Schmeck wants to. Mr. Spitzer, you have?
If they have questions for me, I'm here to answer.
Mr. Hickman?
Same.
Okay. So again, they don't really have any major updates. I will say the one thing from Mr. I'll bring up Mr. Hickman's request is in my budget, I funded, I proposed a carpenter position, and that was originally at his, remember, he requested two positions. One was a carpenter, and one was an assistant HVAC technician. I proposed in my budget the carpenter position, kind of as I discussed with him, I was going to only put one position in, and he kind of said, well, if you're going to do one, I would prefer to have this one. Since that point, and I'm assuming that's still the case, we spoke recently that he would actually prefer to have the assistant HVAC technician position in instead if only one position was going to be funded. And so just for the board's benefit, that position is a lesser dollar amount. So if that's the case, we can get more into the weeds of some of the budgets and department budgets next week, but I just wanted to bring that to your attention. And Mr. Hickman, would you agree with that?
Is there anything, Calvin, that you want to elaborate on as far
come
as
down
the
here,
budget?
So we can hear you. I'm sorry.
I know, you're fine.
All happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Force it happens.
Mm-hmm. No, there really isn't. I'm just here to answer questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see you.
Yeah. And then really the next piece is CIP is really the bigger piece. I know we've got some folks from Fire and Rescue here, and that's kind of really the chance for you all to kind of get in the weeds a little bit about CIP. The one thing to remember about CIP is generally the way that the county funds it. It does not affect the tax rate because we use it out of fund balance. I mean, so that's one thing to kind of keep in mind. But let me pull up the CIP really quick here. That. So I'm just going to kind of go down the page here really quick and just kind of discuss what things were in the budget this year. For each department and which things I did not request that I pushed out. And then if you have questions, you know, we may have some of those subject matter experts here to answer your questions. So for Parks and Rec, Mr. Spitzer requested a Pleasant Grove Park concrete slabs under two of the structures there. He requested $75,500. I did not include that in my proposed budget. I pushed that out to the out year. He also requests some additional funding for a Pleasant Grove Park playground expansion in an inclusive structure for $53,500. He had some funding provided in what?
Proffer money?
Yeah, some proffer money provided in a previous year. And he was to try and get some grant money to help offset that, but he has not been able to get any type of grant money. So to move the playground structure forward would require some additional funding. So I did include that in my proposed budget. And if you see here, he did include that as a rank one, meaning it's more important. And going back to the concrete slabs, he put that as a rank two.
Okay, when you say inclusive structure, structure.
Basically, handicap accessible.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to clarify, that it is for special needs kids.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yep. In addition, he had in his budget request a Pleasant Grove Park stage cover for $75,000 for the stage in the back of the park. And again, put an estimate in there of $75,000. Again, that was not a higher ranked priority for him. So I did move that out to an out year and did not fund that in my budget. And then the last one is Carysbrook gym flooring, the gymnasium over here. The flooring is thin and getting to end of life, and so again, I did fund that, and he put that in as an item one. So, does the board have any questions or any comments, and we can bring up the request or anything? And like I said, Mr. Spitzer's here to answer those.
When you say you put it in an out year, you meant you just moved it 1 year?
I moved it out 1 year.
Just
yeah.
1 year.
Yep.
Okay. Anything you move further out than 1 year?
No.
All of it.
Everything, if I didn't put it in this year, I just moved it out to the next year. Okay. So again, you know, again, next year may look high. Remember, in this fiscal year 24, we had about $10.6 million total of projects. And so I probably funded about half of that amount. And so the others have pushed out to 2025. So that's for Parks and Rec. Does the board have any particular questions? Or you want to get more information on any of these items?
What's the other? Remind me what other.
So other is either grants. Other could be, like for Forking and Sanitary District System. You know, the county doesn't fund those projects necessarily. It could be their own funding. It could be, ARPA funding or something like that. So some other type of besides county tax rate or county fund balance funding is what kind of falls under other. So any questions for Parks and Rec?
Thank you.
Mr. Spitzer, all right, you're sure. Up there. For Public Works, again, Public Works requested, I kept the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund in, kind of going down the line here, requested $245,000 for major equipment being heavy equipment and I don't remember what was in this one. Let me just open it up. It would be things for like skid steers, tractors, large, when I say dump trucks, I mean large heavy duty trucks with dumped out bodies in them and stuff like that. So again, a skid steer was requested and a 1-ton utility body pickup truck. So I funded the skid steer in my budget proposal. I didn't fund the full request. Under Public Works Equipment Shed, the board provided some funding in a previous year for an equipment shed out here. Again, with the way prices have increased for that, the funding for that is not sufficient to be able to complete that project. So the request was for an additional $100,000 for that. And that would be to house all the equipment and everything, all the heavy equipment. And would that be for landscaping equipment as well?
No, landscaping equipment would probably be in this shop over here. That would just be for heavy equipment.
Heavy equipment, yeah.
And where would that go?
Back behind here.
Adjacent to our building.
Yep.
The $100,000 shed would go where?
It would be on this on the property here,
right behind this
behind the band shop. So that was included. The Fluvanna Community Center, we talked about that. We had some individual discussion about that. Again, $650,000 was requested in there for a multiple of things to do, and as you saw at a previous work session, I funded $150,000 out of that request for some internal things. The Fluvanna County Convenience Center, there was a $390,000 request for some upgrades in there. I did not fund all those requests, although in the Convenience Center budget, there was some initial funding to do some site improvements on there. And we also get some proffer money from Republic Services where we could also utilize some of that funding to do some of the improvements, but I did not fund the whole $390,000. And so some of the things, I mean, Mr. Hickman, you want to talk about kind of what you're proposing there?
At the convenience
center? Yeah.
I didn't see that you had
I did not include that in my budget,
right,
but
I did not include that.
But again, you want to talk about what was proposed in that request?
We did want to do some work out there at the convenience center. We do have a lot of phone calls from the road improvement out there and yes.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to do the work. We did want to do that work to upgrade that building. We have put a new sign up there.
Yeah,
you've seen the new sign?
Nice. Very nice. Yeah.
And we just tried to make it look like a nicer place.
Yeah, and there was some discussion too about doing some reconfiguration. Instead of having everything up top to the left, most of the things are down to the right. When you go in, you know, you've got the compactors, and so kind of reconfiguring it so all the functionality of the convenience center would be down to the right when you go in.
That is correct. We're going to have two compactors, and the brush will be brought down lower.
So how much was the road itself?
The
improvements on the road.
I want to say to pave it was in the range of 100,000. Because it had to be heavy duty.
Right.
Because
right,
you got so
right,
much traffic.
Got to be able
trucks
to take heavy yes equipment.
And plus, I don't necessarily know that when the road was originally done. Again, it's got a big slope going
yeah,
down
yeah
and going up. So I mean, there is.
Everything just washes.
Yeah, that slope has to be corrected.
Yeah. So that's kind of a big piece of that.
I know. I get emails.
How much did the
road itself?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm switching gears. How much did the fund balance increase?
I think we increased, I want to say it was around, we added about $2 to $3 million to fund balance this year.
Schools and.
Yeah, just everything. That's what our net change to fund balance was. It was roughly around $2 to $3 million. Go down the list here. Convenience center, library interior painting and carpet is that's overdue. $200,000 request there for that project. That was included in my budget. Also, the public safety building, the sheriff's building. Again, same type of thing, interior painting and carpeting throughout that entire building, $175,000, that was included in my budget. Social services vehicle, I think you remember when this maid came and spoke, she originally had $70,000 in, and what I funded $50,000 out of that $70,000 because the county can get a better deal on pickup truck purchases than $70,000. Major county building major paving project was in there for $900,000. I did not fund that in my budget. It's gonna have to be done at some point. And, you know, I think different areas have differing degrees of what needs to be done. I just think in the past, we probably haven't done a great job of sealing the pavement and doing that, the annual maintenance that's required. A lot of the pavement's probably the original pavement, I would assume. Is that correct, Calvin?
Yeah. Yes.
So that was not included in my budget. I know Mr. Hickman will want to speak on this. Historic courthouse restoration. So really, that's really a multi-year project that totals roughly about $2 million to do everything that's required. Again, I didn't fund the full thing in my budget, and actually in this year, I'm being optimistic that the General Assembly is going to provide funding for the county's courthouse project. But again, I think Mr. Hickman would say that is maybe even still not enough to do the project. And there's maybe some more critical things that he would say that need to be done.
Yeah, you know, we changed it into three phases, and we're in phase one right now. Phase two is about $800,000. And in Mr. Dahl's budget is not funded. It is we're hoping for money from the state, and that's just to cover the roof. That's not to cover anything else. Then so we will be looking for funding for phase two, and then there's phase three on top of that. You know, we've got our 200-year anniversary coming up in just a few years. And working towards that.
And it will be finished by then.
I am optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Optimistic.
I'm not optimistic.
I'm not optimistic.
So what was the amount that was taken out then?
I basically took out, so there was about $1 million. There was $1 million, I'm sorry. There was $760,000 in the budget this year. I funded, well, I shouldn't say I funded half of it. I included the portion that we would get funded from the state. Mm-hmm. So I did not fund any county contribution in this year. Mm-hmm. So that may be something that if the board finds value, that they may want to add some funding to. Under county vehicles, again, there was a request for different types of, you know, county vehicles can be from public works, from county administration, from planning and zoning and things like that. So there was a request for multiple vehicles for about $250,000. I funded $200,000 out of that $250,000. And then the last item was some engineering for Carysbrook Waterline out here. But again, that's under the other category because that's generally funded through FUSD's fund balance.
Can we use that Dominion money for that too?
Maybe. We could maybe take a look at it since it comes up this way. We'll have to see. There may be an opportunity to do something potentially. So those are public works projects. Does the board have any particular questions on any of those items?
And if we don't get the money from the state for the historic courthouse, then we
have nothing. We have nothing in there to do.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we won't even get phase one done.
Yeah.
We will get phase one done.
We will.
We do have the money for
five. Oh, yeah, okay. Phase one's a small amount. It's okay. Only about, what, 100?
Yeah, just over 100.
Right.
Just a little over 100,000.
And they also, in that proposal, put in long-term things so we won't get behind in the future. You know, things that need to be done, need to do. If we do them, then we can keep the courthouse up to par.
Yeah.
Responsibility when you have a historical important building on your property.
Yep. So any further questions on public works projects? Okay, going down to public safety. So on the sheriff's project, he requested $630,575 and I funded $573,250, and I funded that out of ARPA funding. If you remember, we have revenue replacement that we can use for certain types of projects and services. So I did include ARPA funding to fund the sheriff's vehicles for that amount. And Sheriff Hess may have some questions. Like I said, I didn't fund the full amount. I think I excluded one vehicle as the equivalent.
Right. And the reason we asked for that many this year is that, as you'll see in my budget this year, we just about burned up our repair and maintenance line because we have so many old vehicles. Because during COVID, we didn't get any cars that year. So that basically put us the 7 or 8 cars we get a year behind. So we're running cars with much higher mileage and we're having major breakdowns. We had to replace an engine. We had, you know, there were major things we've had to replace. It's kind of taking a toll on the repair and maintenance budget for this year.
Who do you all maintenance for the school system?
What we did is the engine before this one that went bad, without having a factory technician working on the vehicles, the dealerships would not honor the warranty. So now we go to Goodson's.
Yeah.
They have certified technicians. Not only do they, you know, like change the oil, they'll do a safety inspection of the entire vehicle, put it on the computer, see what needs to be done to it. And they've done an outstanding job taking care of our vehicles. We buy our oil by the barrel and we buy all our parts. We get discounts from up at Advance, so we do all that and make it work as cheaply as possible.
So again, I use ARPA funding to fund the sheriff's vehicles, but I shorted them one vehicle.
How many will that get you?
570. That gets them probably about 9 to 10.
Not between 9 and 10, depending on every vehicle went up some, so it kind of hit us there. But we're also gonna trade in some of our old vehicles. Will help us out with some of that also. Yeah. Any other questions or anything? So we really don't know exactly what kind of vehicles we'll get this year. It'll depend on what's available. Right now, the only thing that what's looking like the most likely available vehicle, because she, Ford, ordered several hundred of the SUVs. It's not our favorite, but it's the price increases in the Charger makes it pretty much comparable. Charger used to be our cheapest vehicle. We actually purchased the last two that were on the market. We snatched those up, but they're sitting up the road waiting on equipment to be where we can get equipment to put in the building. So, yep.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you. Under fire and rescue, again, they had about, I don't remember what the full request is, I can go back. So I'll just kind of go line by line. So under ambulance 555 and John Lai and Chris Alley are here from Fire and Rescue, so I'm sure they can talk on any of these. They requested $388,000 for ambulance 555, and I did include that in my budget proposal. For Brush 30 for Kent Store, it was requested for $221,150. I did not include that in my budget proposal. Also, Tanker 31 for Kent Store was due for replacement for a total of $769,300. And I did include that in my proposal. And if you see here, it's in the other column. And the reason I did that, because I funded it out of ARPA revenue replacement to fund some of the public safety equipment. Going under fire and rescue computer replacement, those are all the computers throughout the whole fire and rescue organization, for all the computers that are on all the apparatus and everything. So that's a complete upgrade and swap over of the existing computer equipment they have, and that amount was $233,780. I did include that in my budget proposal.
Do I remember right that there was some sort of ticking clock associated with that technology? In other words, like if we didn't change it out this year, isn't there?
Well, they're all failing. They're starting to fail, and some of them are old enough that we can't get parts for them anymore. So
yeah.
We just had to send two back because the touch screens that we used to sign for the medical releases aren't working anymore. So they're basically at end of life. They're failing. And then the other two items, so there was $150,000 for engine equipment, for engine 20, for Fork Union for $150,000. I did not include that in my budget proposal. And then Fork Union, basically a UTV for Fork Union for $65,000. And again, I did not include that in my budget proposal. And so I'm sure these gentlemen would be happy to answer any questions you have regarding any of the requests.
What's a UTV?
I'm sorry?
What is a UTV?
It's a all-terrain vehicle.
Four-wheeler. It's big four-wheeler for going off-road.
This one will be capable of not only transporting patients, but also it has firefighting capabilities. It has water, foam, hose reel, pump on it. Mm-hmm. And it's mainly for places we can't get a truck to.
Right.
Fork Union has area, mm-hmm. low area, and even railroad tracks, anything all the way from Scottsville back to Columbia. We have a lot of places we could use that. The UTV would be a great tool and be useful for many, many, many things in many ways. However, it is not the most important thing on the CIP, and it can wait.
Right. Do we have any in the count?
We have one in Palmyra that's just a patient transport.
Mm-hmm.
The lake has one that they're kind of working on in Kent Store.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, asked for half the funding for theirs, and they're still in the midst of getting all that together.
Yeah, the county provided funding to purchase the UTV, right. And they're using.
And in the end, I believe theirs is going to be similar to what I want to do. It'll be have firefighting and right. patient transport capabilities. But it is not the most important thing on the list. I would rather have at least some of the equipment money for the engine rather than if I had to put something off. But then there's a couple of things John wanted to talk about on the other side of the budget too. But I know it's a tight year and we can only do what we can do. So
can you elaborate on the equipment of what it is and reason for it?
So I talked a little bit about it last week. We've been working on this engine project for way before COVID. The truck kept getting put off, whatever. But when we added an engine to the station, no one bothered to put equipment back on it. They were kind of using it for a spare. We really need two fully functional engines. So at the request of, and it was actually Mr. Dahl's idea originally, and at the request of him, we came back and asked for additional money for the truck to equip it. At that point, we got granted right around $115,000 by the board. I think it was 114 something, or 116. It was right in there. Unfortunately, that money got ate up in all those big price increases from all that time. And actually, we had to come back and you had to grant more money just to get the contract secured on the truck. So that money wound up going into the cost of the truck.
Now you have an engine that doesn't have hoses and lights.
And we'll still probably have to put some money in it because almost everything has just about doubled in price, hose, everything. So, but that would get us what we need to get to definitely get going with it.
Any forecast as to when we're going to get that?
So, as you all know,
I'm not being a person,
I don't have an exact answer, Mr. Sheridan, but as you all know, we signed the contracts for three trucks a year ago, February. Originally, the pre-engineering for the engine was supposed to be in this month. Now it's moved to more towards the end of the year. I talked to the Atlantic salesperson last Friday. I saw him at a show, and he said it's moved like 3 days. It's somewhere around like October to November range, somewhere in there for right now, unless it moves again. Pierce is way backlogged on their trucks right now. And so you're probably looking at another year before we see the truck once the pre-engineering is done, at least a year to a year and a couple months. So honestly, even if we could work out where we do like split the money over two budget years or something, would even work. It's definitely an idea, or you know.
Yeah, I guess the thing with the board, I mean, if you feel like you want to fund it, I mean, if you fund half of it this year, half of it next year, I mean, I would say fund it all at one time if you're going to fund it at this point, or if you're going to fund it all a different year, then just fund it all. I mean, that's my recommendation, and certainly the board.
What I'm concerned about waiting until next year is prices are still going up too. There's a lot of items that are still very hard to get, and back order takes a long time to get them. This would give us the opportunity to be able to get the things we need for the truck. We could store it, and when the truck comes in, we'll basically be able to put everything on it and put it in service. If we wait till next July or a year from July, the truck still won't quite be here yet. However, we'll be waiting on equipment for it. So like I said, you guys have tough decisions this year. I'm not gonna jump up and down and holler and scream or anything. I mean, it is what it is, and just
we appreciate that.
Just yeah. Just let you guys
kind of looking forward to it.
I hate just what you were looking forward to me jumping up and down and screaming. Well, I think this goes on the YouTube channel. I don't want anybody seeing that. But
I teach at the middle school. I don't know. I haven't had enough of that today.
But yeah. No, I mean, I know it's a tough year and everything, but that's kind of the story on it. It was, it started as a suggestion from the county administrator's office to try to help us out, to catch us up, because we're, you know, Fork Union struggles a little bit financially, and that's from leaders, a little bit of past before me, but, you know.
And something Chris said to me recently, a little bit unrelated, but kind of related, it's just a good thing for me to think about, and something I would have never thought about, that fundraising for them, when you look at the, I'm trying to think of the way to say it, the community that each station is in, some stations, based upon the community of people that they're serving, are going to have different abilities in fundraising. You can have one area where you have more money, where it's more affluent, and therefore to have a function can get more money in compared to another community that doesn't have as many resources. And I don't know the extent that affects or is true here, but to me that's just 2 + 2 = 4, meaning that's clearly common sense, it would seem. And I'd like to, I know I'm in at least through the rest of the week, I'd like to, if I can, come down and see the truck and see, you know, I'm a visual person, and just see what you're talking about, what it needs to be finished outfitting and so on.
Yeah, and I mean, you're welcome anytime. You have my number.
Yeah.
Give me a call. We've talked about, you know, having some of you down. Every so often, Moselle stops by when she sees us out there.
When you're cooking.
And, you know, and also the other thing, too, with it's usually when we're cooking. But as far as fundraising goes, too, is volunteers,
yeah.
The calls are increasing.
Mm-hmm.
The training hours are increasing, which means things that have to be done around the firehouse and stuff like that are increasing. So these guys are putting all their time in that. And it's hard to get people down there on an extra Saturday or something to wash cars or whatever it is we might do.
I'll say this much. Our big fundraising event was more team building and was more a community event. We used to do a Brunswick City.
Yeah.
There's still pictures I've got, and I look back and smile at them
yeah.
with Dad out yep. there stirring the pot in the Brunswick Stew. But if we do a Brunswick Stew and sell 200 quarts of Brunswick Stew at $7 a piece.
Well, y'all still do it?
No, we have to.
Okay.
That's $1,400, Chris,
right.
And that buys you five halogen tools.
But you don't do it because you can't get the volunteers to come out and do it?
Or yeah.
Why
you
do you not intend to it?
Hey, I'm not saying
it could.
But
it's so time consuming, and he's talking about those times. I mean, like I said, I'm wearing my patron tonight. If this thing goes off, I'm leaving. I hate to say it that way.
Well, you have to think you've got a different people. I mean,
but I'm saying it doesn't raise.
Yeah, Fock Union. Oh,
we're talking about $125,000 to fit one vehicle, and that's not even all the equipment.
Then the other thing, too,
and I'm talking about raising $1,400.
One thing that's unique for Fork Union, too, is remember our building was a FEMA building, so there's restrictions on things we can and can't do with the building, too. So that puts an extra on that particular building versus some of the others can like, we can't do bingo. They can do bingo. Like, it's just, you know.
Yeah.
New Canton still does the barbecue chicken. They sell the barbecue chicken plates, but they're selling them for $10 a pop. So,
yeah.
Like I said, even if you sell 1,000 plates, it'd be a lot of chicken to cook.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's $10,000. That buys you enough
fire. And that's probably a good 16, 20-hour day for them.
And it's not one day. You're talking about a week-long event.
Yeah.
Cutting vegetables and everything else.
You remember when Palmyre used to have the sign out there, the old Palmyre fire station, where they had how much they had saved, and you could go by and see how much they had raised and where they wanted to go. That was motivating, and people would, they'd send out notes, people would send it in, but everything's changed.
I brought up with Chief Alley and with the guys from Palmyre and doing bingo at Ken Store at the ARC Hall. But all of a sudden, then you got to start talking about gambling licenses and everything else. But, you know, and who's going to get there to call it, and how?
It's a lot more to it than just doing it. It really is.
You had said you would not suggest doing it in two halves. Why is that?
Well, I mean, you can. I mean,
I guess the question is, if the board wants to fund it right now, just fund the whole bit right now instead of splitting it up between the 2 years.
We have fund balance in house, so it's just changing the.
Yeah, if the board thinks we want to fund it this year, we'll then just put the full amount in this year, and that's.
I hate to ask this question, but I have to. What is that going to put the cost of this truck at right now? So, over a million?
No, not that much.
It's going to be close.
We signed the contracts for seven something. I don't have that.
But then we gave you the extra 114. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but see that. But that's part of that seven something. Now that all went away.
Okay.
I thought it was originally six something plus the 114. That got all used in the.
I think once the contracts were signed, there's just a 20 or 30 left over somewhere. And that I was kind of holding that back for pre-engineering in case there was some sort of mandatory change.
There always is.
And there usually is. I guarantee you there's been an EPA or DOT change since then. So that's probably going to get ate up in that once it goes to engineering. So that's where we're at now. I mean, there.
Yeah, the truck was. I think we. I would say 750, maybe. Is that
somewhere now? I'd have to go back and.
I mean, 870.
I've got it somewhere. I'd have to go back and find it. I just don't. I didn't look it up before I came tonight.
I'm sorry. I keep hitting you with questions. And I don't think about it until I sit here and look. At trust me, I do that, Mr. Dahl, all the time.
It's gonna put it somewhere between 850 and 9 in the end. What if you can't include the equipment in that?
Well, and again, what I tried to do in this CIP, I tried to fund a little bit of everyone's request. Again, I didn't fund the full thing, but I tried to fund usually at least mostly half of everyone's requests that I tried to do. So any further questions on the fire and rescue equipment for CIPs? And again, next week when we get into the budget, I mean, we can certainly add some of these in. We'll have fund balance numbers for you. I mean, fund balance numbers are always at the end of the board package too for where it stands. And so again, out of, and like I said, we'll go to the schools. Out of the county, go on, sir.
What is brush? The spelling on that, what is that actually?
Oh, that's brush. It's incorrect spelling.
Somebody probably had one of those little blue and white cans in front of them. Combined brush and.
It's supposed to be word. Brush.
That's just brush.
Okay, I just didn't know if that was
It's the truck that we had refurbished. We took a 20-year-old truck, took the body off of it, put it onto a Hummer chassis, and so now we have a Slash monster of a truck. It didn't cost us anywhere near as much in the beginning, but it's. How old now, Chief Allen?
It's the same truck I talked about last week. It's
it's a 2016.
The truck itself is 25 years old, and the refurb is somewhere between 8 and 10 on it.
So it was due to be replaced quite a few years ago, but because of the refurb, we put it off a few years, and it was due to be replaced this year. That was the agreement we had reached since they had refurbished it.
And I think Tanker, if I remember correctly, Tanker 31 is a 1998 truck, if I recall, and that's the reason I funded
that. That's going to break my heart, though, because I can tell you right now, that's the best driving vehicle in our entire fleet, because I've driven just about every one of them. That thing, man, it'll get you in trouble.
I don't know. I personally have an issue funding the equipment myself, so
next week when we get in, if the board wants to add the 150 to the, I think it's 150, wants to add the 150 to the, as we're going through, we can certainly do that.
If I may, since I wasn't here last week, and I apologize for that, I had scheduled a trip out of the country, so I wasn't able to be here. But there were two things in the operating budget that I'd like to bring to your attention. The first is the Chief One budget.
Mm-hmm.
For the last several years, we've been asking for $10,600 for it. So it's not a big budget. But with costs, I had requested $12,000 this year, and Mr. Dahl cut it back to $5,000. I am afraid that is going to be really insufficient for the Chief One budget. Basically, with fuel costs now, that $5,000 is probably going to cover the fuel and very little else. That won't cover preventive maintenance and oil changes and repair bills on the vehicle itself.
Any equipment he
needs. Any equipment he might need. If he has to replace turnout gear, gas detectors, any of that stuff, that
tires,
all comes down to that same budget. Tires, repair costs. So I'm very concerned that $5,000 will not be sufficient for that. So at the very least, I'd like to see it go back to last year's budget of $10,600. If you guys are willing to.
I did have a specific reason because I was told in the past that part of the money was kind of a rollover, and so some of it was for operational, but some of it was to build up to at a later point purchase a new Chief One vehicle. And so the county's been purchasing the vehicles outright instead of having to roll over.
That is correct. We would Mike, the previous county chief, would save back what he could, but not $5,000 a year. Like, just whatever little few hundred, $1,000, $1,500 might have been left over was saved back year after year after year. And, you know, every 15 years or so, then he'd... I think the last Chief One vehicle was new, but most of them have been used just because whatever he saved where he could, but he'd not
We've made notes about the Chief One piece. So I mean, certainly the board can revisit that next week when we go over that.
The other thing I'd like to bring your attention to is that the Flavanna Fire budget. Mr. Dahl has recommended about 91.4% of our request, and the Lake Fire Rescue budget is only being recommended at 84.9%. So there's a significant fairness, if you will, there. It seems to me they should both be funded at similar percentages. And that would raise, if you funded the Lake at the same rate that you fund Flavanna Fire, that would change the 404 to 435. So I just like to bring that to your attention as well, that the rate of funding versus request is significantly different for those two.
Have you all talked about why that is?
Talked about why what is?
Why they're different?
I guess a little bit, one of it comes down to it's just trying to squeeze in what you can. I mean, I'm happy to pull up the budget.
We can look at it next week too.
Mostly at this point, I wanted to bring it to your attention.
We talked about the Chief One part a little bit last week, but I didn't catch that when I presented the budget to you. So we did not talk about that.
And I hadn't run the numbers.
And he hadn't run the numbers yet either. So.
At that point, so I couldn't.
Back to Chief One. So you're talking about, call it $1,400 or $1,200 each year. That kind of
whatever might just right. Whatever was left over. Right. You know, so it's probably different every year, honestly.
Yeah. So, taking that amount out this year, to me, the amount, I mean, it could be a one-time event that it's that much less. Meaning, if you are sitting, or in Chief One, if there's money set back, it's not all about necessarily how much comes out. It's not about creating a precedence necessarily. I guess I'm asking this as a question. If there's $8,000 sitting in that account, then it's... You follow where I'm
going? Yeah, honestly, I don't know what's in that account.
I don't know exactly what it's got. I do know in a conversation I had with the chief last night, there's a little bit of money that he's got to put out of that account into the new car that's been ordered. And I think Ken Storr's got to do the same just because there's been a price increase between the time it was approved and the time they found a company to build the car. So they're getting built the same place. I don't even know where that is, honestly, but...
Some of that's going to be used into
the car too. So
yeah, but I think you know if you at least could fund it, you know, at last year's budget, I think that would go a long way towards keeping him solvent.
Do y'all keep? I'm sure you do keep a yearly record of where all that money.
Oh yeah, goes we have to.
Yeah,
because I mean we have to file taxes just like any other department, even though we're nonprofit.
You still have to do a 990.
So what happens is we have a county treasurer, all the departments, and even Chief One manages his own budget. But all that goes to the county treasurer, and then because we're a charter that's Levanna County Fire Department, so we have to file our taxes as one.
Yeah.
Even though we have our own separate operating budgets for each station.
Could we, so when we talk about whether we bought it back just to level funding with last year or whatever, I don't know, is that something that we could see of where the...
Oh, I'm sure Mr. Lynn could provide those numbers for you, yeah. Or Dwayne.
That would justify, you know, okay. if the money's truly being used, then to me it's just an easy thing, potentially an easy thing to say. I don't know if, what do you think? In other words, if they're saying, if we level funded with last year, and I'm sure the argument would be they wouldn't ask for it if they weren't going to use it, then wouldn't we be able to say see how they use it? In other words, if this is going to take, I'm just pulling a number out of the air, $3,000 out of important, needed yearly money, then we'd be able to see that $3,000 is needed. If it's not needed, we'd be able to see that too.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers, you know, from the county standpoint, we don't have any requirements in place to request financials or see tax returns at the end of the year. I mean, some organizations, they have to do that. Some organizations, there's an agreement in place that if the full funding's not used within that fiscal year, it goes back to the locality. So there's a lot of different things that the county could look at if they want to take a deeper dive into that.
But again, I haven't been in government a long time. Yeah. It's just, to me, it makes sense if there's some debate of how much it should be. It doesn't need to be a whole lot of debate if you can see the numbers. And creating a precedence or any of that.
I have a personal Tahoe, and right now it's costing, depending on where you get gas right now, $80 to $90 to fill it up from empty.
Yeah.
You figure a tank of gas a week, say there's 4 weeks every month in 12 months, which some months are a little longer. If you put a tank of gas a week in it, that's $5,000 in a year right there.
Yeah, so maybe it's $8,000 and not $10,000, but maybe it is more than $10,000. I'm just saying the numbers, the data's there to reflect on and make decisions upon.
Yeah, I don't have them, but the data's there, no doubt about it. Cool. Any other questions? Thank you for your time.
Thank you all.
Appreciate you.
And then last but not least, schools. Again, the capital reserves in there for the schools. They requested a generator for Carisbrook Elementary for $50,000. I did not include that in my budget. Really, probably the biggest item that I did not include in my budget, they requested $1.5 million for a central bathroom remodel and renovation. And I think Dr. Stribling, when he was here last, I think he's talked a little bit about that project. Wireless upgrades, Fluvanna County Public Schools Division wireless upgrades, they requested $600,000 with $100,000 being I think some state funding, and then $500,000 from the county. So
didn't we fund that last year?
We funded.
No, we funded. There was a big. The high school.
It was a high school. It was in the high school.
$100,000 back.
You talking about from carryover?
Carryover.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. No. I mean, I know that they were pushing to get the wireless redone in the high school. That rings a bell. So it was,
the high school was the
intercom system. Because they couldn't communicate to classrooms.
Yeah, but there was also a wireless upgrade that was done there.
That was 2 years ago.
Or maybe it was 2 years ago.
I think it was 2 years ago. And let me take a look at this because I don't...
So this is
those stinky computer people, that's the business to be in.
Uh-huh. Let's see here. This request is similar to requests from last year with specifics to the FCHS wireless upgrades that was approved. So FCHS was approved, and so I believe, as I'm just doing a quick scan, I believe this is for... for the other three schools.
For the four.
Yeah, let's see here. Due to the number of access points and multiple schools that would again go through the E-rate process. So this is for more schools, whereas previously it was specific to the high school, is what I recall. No, as I'm reading this.
150 and 300,000, and we're approving.
600,000?
No, we didn't approve 600.
Well, that's what's in there. 100,000 from the state and then 500 from us.
Yeah, they're...
Oh, yeah, that doesn't make sense then.
We can, like I said, the school...
Oh, I think the catch there, if I recall, we kind of went through this last time, is they give you the full number, and then they got to do the E-rate, and then they get that money back.
Yeah.
Yes, and I think they give us the low number of E-rate, because they don't exactly know what it's going to be at this point.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the cost of it per pre-E-rate.
The 600's the cost. We put 500 county, 100 E-rate. The 100 E-rate could potentially be more.
Could be more.
It could be more. I think they gave us what the low end E-rate is going to be.
Probably get clarification on that.
Yeah. When it comes back, then that comes back to us.
I mean the E-rate. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's less. I mean it's less county funding that the county has to. Less general fund money that the county has to balance that project with is the way it works. Again, they requested paving. They've got a multi-year paving project. And again, I think once we decide to bite the bullet and do county paving, it probably makes sense to do one big consolidated paving project between both county and schools and get some economies of scale to do everything at once. But again, they requested 300 this year, 550, well, 300, 250, and then 250. So they're getting close to 800, 900,000 too, similar to what the county is requesting for paving. Fluvanna Middle School annex gym floors and bleachers, requested 175. I did not include this one in my budget. And then the last two items, school buses and student transport vehicles, 580 for school buses.
Correct me if I'm wrong, didn't we buy 13 school buses last year?
So we purchased
10 with the money
with debt funding,
and then I think we bought three or four.
I think they purchased, there was a few buses they purchased out of their operational funds, I believe.
I recall a number of like 11, but either way, 10, 11, 13, still a lot of, you know.
I don't want us to sit here and have 16 buses that we have to replace in 20 years. I mean, it, we talked about the 20-year life cycle.
Right.
And we bought a lot of buses in the last 3 years, 4 years.
And the mileage doesn't determine that? I mean, some
well,
of them
they say, I think that's what they talked about, is a 20-year life cycle.
Oh, just and a life cycle.
I may be wrong, maybe 15. I know I've driven buses that were 30-some years old before.
Yes.
But that's a long time ago, because that's when I first got on the board. We hadn't done them in a while, but we've been buying.
Yeah, we took out debt proceeds and took out debt to do the buses in fiscal year 22, I believe.
I just remember the number, and then 66, I think, or 68 is what they said they need daily basis.
And then I think last year, for the current fiscal year we're in for 23, I think we either didn't fund a lot of buses, or if we did, we only funded a few.
We also funded the upgrade of the air conditioning.
Correct.
Are they driving all of those buses on the road, Mike?
I thought I remembered the number, and like I said, it gets together. 68 and 66 were the number of route buses that were needed.
But what, I don't mean this sarcastic or trying to cut this off, but I'm missing what your point is behind saying that.
All right, if we buy 20 buses in 2 years, well, if we do like we've been doing, that means 20 buses are going to go out of service in however long their life cycle is. So then we got to buy 20 more buses in 2 years. And I've been after for a while to say, okay, we need, let's say, 80 buses total. Well, if it's a 20-year life cycle, that's a pretty simple math problem.
Yeah, but they're not requesting it that way, right?
No, I mean, that's...
Well, we fell behind. We fell way behind a long time ago.
But the schools aren't requesting to do it that way, correct?
Well, they're requesting trying to get caught up with the old buses and get the old buses out of service.
Isn't that a state requirement, though?
I don't think so. No, I think it's a suggestion. It's more of a standard than a suggestion. I mean, there's you know, I mean, I think like Fire and Rescue talked about, they've got standards.
20 years,
like 20 years to replace buses. I think there's a Department of Ed standard probably for the life cycle.
There's not a law, because I'm telling you, in 2000, I was driving buses that had 1970 written on it.
And to go back to the school's trajectory, you can see here they requested 580 in 24, 580 in 25, and then they ramped it down to 350 in 26, 350 in 27.
That's three.
Yeah, 350 in 28.
Basically, I'm thinking of 120,000 or 110,000 per bus.
You got 60 buses, you got 23 per year, is a 20-year life cycle, so that's...
So aren't they doing it?
What's that?
They are requesting some of that cycle.
We're still trying to catch up.
They're trying to
catch
up.
Mike's just pointing out that we did. What Mike's saying is, we bought so many that if we buy more right now, you're going to end up in the situation 20 years down the road where you have to buy 23 buses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Assuming they're all replaced in one time.
You know, that's the point that I've been trying to make. Is, and I know we're trying to catch up, but.
But if you front-ended too much, then you're in the same pickle down the road, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, then we put a board that's 20 years in front of us in the same problem that we're dealing with right now instead of...
Yeah. And we probably couldn't get 20 buses.
I mean, they'll probably float on air by then.
But
they'll probably drive themselves and just go to house to house and hit a button.
But I mean, there's a lot that is happening with buses. A lot of schools are now deploying electric vehicle buses. Who knows what other technology will come out. So you got to do it. You got to do what you got to do. But maybe it would be really helpful in these situations if there was an actual life cycle spreadsheet that said, "Here's what we've done."
And it looks like 3 years down the road, that's what they're going to try to do.
Right.
But I mean, I'd like to know how many we've bought since we've been on the board in 10 years.
I thought they kept.
We could find out what was the amount of funding that you provided every year, and it's pretty easy to figure out. I mean, you know, each bus, give or take, you know, now it's about 110. I remember at one point they were 100, and then not long before they're, you know, high 90s or something like 80, that.
I thought the system had a running chart like that. And how many miles on these buses?
No, they have it by years.
Only years?
I think. Well, they may have it by miles.
I'm sure they've got something. Yeah, right.
That's just the point that I was trying to make, Chris. I'm not trying to be argumentative about it, but over the last...
Is that at all?
We bought so many that all of a sudden, if we're still using gas and diesel in 15 years, we're going to have to start buying 5 to 7 to 10 a year.
So that's it for the CIP. I mean, again...
There's one thing I will say right now, and I'm going to bring it up to all y'all, and I bring it up every year, and I have no idea why we've not done this. The track at the middle school is in horrible condition. I will send you pictures tomorrow. I don't know how long ago we put in, not asphalt, but a rubberized surface. Well, the rubberized surface has gotten old where it's gotten cracks in it, and now it's just... They're holes. I mean, you get towards the finish line, and there's 5-foot-long holes that are 1.5 wide in the rubber. Now, granted, it's only that much of a drop-off, but if somebody's foot, and we keep trying to patch it and patch it and patch it, and the water won't leave the track. So if we get big rains, we end up with a moat. Remember how the water used to pile up in the ditches, but it had that corner over there where they pump it out or to drain out? Roots have filled that up. So, I mean, we just need to redo that track and open it up. I would love for us, if we redid the track, to open it up to the public so the public would have an area after school hours or after practice hours so they're not there. Anyway, I brought this up every year for the last 5 years, but it never gets put on there. And one section of our track literally has roots going under the track, where it will be a 4-inch jump. You know how roots will buckle asphalt.
Yeah, I mean, and you and I talked about this. I mean, I don't put any requests from the schools. They don't put it forward. I don't.
And I have said this for 5 years. really.
And you all do track meets out there?
Yes, ma'am. We have a better, they started practice today. So I can't tell you how many kids are out there, but.
Yeah, if they don't put it forward.
There's nothing we can do. And I brought it up every year for at least, what, three or four? Every year. And we probably.
That's how little influence you have with this.
I had that conversation with Mr. Strubel the other day.
How about your school board?
Well, I mean, anyway, I think for $150,000, we could probably go in there and replace the whole track, redo it, make it like it was 40 years ago, and we have something that our county can use, the citizens can use, the kids, students can use, and it's one big word, safe.
I'm assuming they put other items ahead of that.
I did. It's not even listed.
Mm-hmm. They didn't submit it.
Take two buses.
That's what I'm saying. They did. They put other items ahead.
Yes.
Of
that. Yeah. Not ask the middle school PE teacher.
So as far as budget CIP, that's all that we really have to go through tonight. I just wanted to give you some high level overview. If you have additional questions, again, next week's going to be in the weeds and kind of getting into it more and trying to really, you know, well, updates for revenues and you know, there may be some little tweaks and changes and expenditures here and there, but that's where we hope that we can start really drilling down on where the budget's going to go.
Knock on wood. I mean, you know, what everything everybody asked for and everything that's listed there is 88.5, and we can't go 88.5. We said that. 86.5 size we can go. So we got to find $700,000, $730,000 from somewhere. And CIP is not the place to find it. But anyway, I'm sorry. I got on my soapbox for a second. I just wish we had some place for our community to access that they pay for.
And if they put it in their budget, we would move it forward.
If they put it in, we would consider it.
Well, we'd consider it. Anyway, mm-hmm. I'll stop preaching now.
No,
I'm sorry. That's my one tangent.
We have to continue. Okay,
I hope they're listening.
Well, you know, we'll all have our annual soapboxes, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
we'll all have
the tax rate.
Thanks on each other. I could say it for you.
And if we want to get out at 9 o'clock, it's 8:45.
No, we're not getting out at 9 o'clock. No, we've got to go to close.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
we're done.
That's good for that.
Are we done?
I just want to get out of here by 10.
We're done with this, right?
Yes. I shouldn't say yes. I mean, if you all are done.
I'm done.
We can sit here and beat ourselves up, but we don't even know how much money the state's given the school system. We don't know with Commissioner Revenue what that taxable value will be that he comes back and gives us. Because, you know, it's always something. Hopefully it's positive, not negative. If it's negative,
we don't have to make anything. You don't have
Are we ready to go to close session?
Does he have to read anything?
Okay. Madam Chair, I move that we end our recess and resume our closed session meeting for the purpose of discussing the unfinished items, which are section 2.2-3711A7 and section 2.2-3711A19 of the Federal Review 1950 Amendment for the purpose of discussing litigation, Gate Plaza LLC versus Nevada County Board of Supervisors and Public Safety and Store Firehouse.
Second, please.
Yes.
All right, motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sherrod, all in favor?
Aye. Okay.
You don't have to roll call
on
that.
No, it's not a roll call for this. Roll call
again. Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge. One, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended. And two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, and considered in the meeting.
Okay, I need a second. I have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Sheridan. Is that Mr. Fairchild?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Sheridan?
Aye.
And Chair votes aye. Now we need to extend the meeting.
Motion to extend till 10:20.
Second.
It has been motion by Mr. O'Brien.
to 10:20, seconded by Mrs. Sherman. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All right. We are adjourned.